then chances are if you've seen more than two of them.
You're listening to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network. Right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Well, you drove out there into the middle of nowhere and had some sort of loud verbal display challenging E.T. in general out in the middle of nowhere?
Oh, yeah, that's what I was doing. I actually had a pistol in my hand at the time. I was really ticked off. When I was having this fit, I was waving the gun in the air, okay, and I had this fit. And at this moment, I said, okay.
Was a Louisiana man named Montaldo. The folks around called him Six Gun Joe. Worked with ICAR, don't you know? Investigating UFOs. Out for a drive with a gal one night, they stopped to check out the reporting site. When an alien lit right there on the ground, he commenced to throw in his weight around. Now, old Six Gun didn't take too kindly to that kind of thing. Especially without Vaseline or anything like that, you know. Seriously. Well, Six Gun looked that critter right in the eye and said, any last wish before you die, y'all? Reached for his gun, quick as a twitch, and said, fill your claw, you son of a bitch. Now, a legend spread across the land about this pistol-waving man. But if you're from space or from Earth below, you don't give no lip to Six Gun Joe.
Over again. Sorry about that, guys. You're going to hear this again, but welcome everyone to another episode of UFO on the Cover. I don't care where you are on our beautiful blue planet, whether it's morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are, welcome. You know, guys, I say it every week. There's no other place I want to be on Wednesday's nights. We have a huge audience, a huge following. We are in every time zone on the planet. I'm pretty sure, with the exception of maybe 30 countries, we're in every country in the world. Last check, we were at either 163 or 167. So we have, you know, and I'm sure there's a couple countries out there that listen to us on the sneak, too, because I noticed the other day I got a letter from a lady from Iran. Really sweet, really nice letter. First off, I'm an ignorant American. I didn't even know you could listen to American radio in Iran, much less a female. So I was just totally ignorant on the whole subject, y'all. Don't hate me, but I was. Very nice lady was telling me how much she enjoyed this show and the show that I do on Saturday night, which really surprised me because, you know, we do a political show on Saturday night, and it's pretty hardcore politics. But it was a very pleasant letter. I was very surprised. It is surprising to me that, you know, we get letters from around the world. Now, China is it's sitting around our fourth, maybe third largest market right now for us. We have a huge following in China. It's amazing how fast it's growing over there. And what's weird about this is, as our American audience kind of wanes off a little bit. Our American and South American audience wane a little bit this starting about this time of year, well, until about August, because, you know, Americans are outside well into the late evenings this time of year, 10, you know, 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night, which I don't blame them. If I could be outside, I'd be outside. It's beautiful this time of year. But as it happens, our European and overseas audience seems to double sometimes. Recently, because of two new servers we've got in the UK, our UK audience is roughly almost a half million listeners now, which is phenomenal. I was just recently approached by one of the company over there about advertising over there because we've been doing so well. If you're listening and you're in that market and you are interested, you can always write me at icarcox.net, and I'll be happy to send you the rates and what we charge. While we're on money, remember, ladies and gentlemen, we are trying to put the network on Roku as its own independent station. It's on Roku already. You can find it on all the major venues such as Live365, Shoutcast, Livestream, Ustream, and whatever other streams they may have that you'll find us on. But Roku offered us a deal to put up our own radio station on Roku. For the people who don't know what Roku is the new wave of Internet television. On my personal Roku I have in my house in Mississippi, I have 1,480 channels, and each one of those channels has a variety of stuff inside of it. Some of the channels have 10, 15 more channels inside them. It's ridiculous. It took me 3 weeks just to get my first 200 picked out into my favorites. There's just so much material. Plus, they have every pay-per-view thing you could ever want. They've got Netflix and Hulu and a whole bunch. And they've got way more movies to select from than any other, like Redbox or Netflix or anybody. Even your own regular cable companies. I think they have access to something like 5.5 million movies at any one time. I'm talking about paid for movies, guys. Plus, and it don't build up on your bill because it comes right off your debit or your credit card when it happens. And get this, it's free. Yes, it's free. Yeah, you're not hearing things. Once you buy the $49 box, out of the 1,500 channels, out of the 1,400 channels, 1,350 of them are free. Yes. And even if you get everything they have offered paid for, you would still only be paying about $50 a month. That's insane. It puts cable to shame. It's the wave of the future. And I'm starting to see things like HBO and Showtime show up on it now. So even they're realizing this is the wave of the future. So there's some big pluses and some big advantages to it. But if you can get it. You'll enjoy it. For us, we're going to add the radio station to it. So we've been asking for people to help out for donations and stuff like that. I talked with them the other day. They're going to waive half of their fee, but still, it's about $5,000. We've got to come out without a pocket and about $400 a month for the service. So, you know, and I told everybody, anybody makes a donation over $100 gets their subscription for free for the first year. So welcome on board. It's coming together. I mean, I've seen about $1,200 in donations so far, so everybody keep up the good work. Well, you can buy the Roku box anywhere. They got Google out and they got Amazon out. None of them have. I checked into it thoroughly before I bought. Y'all know how I am. I checked into it thoroughly. Right now, it offers more buck than for the bang than anything out there. And Roku also has three types of boxes. They got the 49, the 79, and the 99, just depending on how advanced you want. They all get the same amount of channels. They just have different features. I think the 99 is voice activated, so you can talk to it. Yes, I'm not sure if I'm training my son's Xbox or it's training me, but we have interesting conversations late at night when you hear me say Xbox on, Xbox select Netflix, Xbox select one. My wife just looks at me like you're losing your mind. You're talking to an Xbox. And no, I'm not a big Xbox fan, but I do like the mobile features. Ladies and gentlemen, anyway, a couple more things and then we're going to get down. We have a guest with us tonight. Usually I'll ramble for a little while. We don't have a guest, but a couple of the real quick things. A friend of mine sent me a thing off the West Coast 2 days ago about a flap of sightings that had been seen up and down from Vancouver, Canada. As far south is Mexico. I can't remember the name of the town, but it's right there, right off the other side of the Baja Peninsula. And they're describing these things as elongated saucers, so they're saucers that are kind of stretched out. They got the general saucer shape, but they're kind of pulled out a little bit, so they're not a complete saucer, more like an oval shape. They've been sighted basically in I don't know, a dozen and a half cities, from, like I said, from Vancouver all the way down to Mexico. So we've got them in Canada, the United States, and in Mexico. And in the United States, we have them in Washington, Oregon, California, Nevada, and Utah, I believe. There was all reports made. So don't know what the hell they are. If it's the ships that we think they are, it's probably reptilian, but who really knows? until one of them pops their little heads out and says, "Hey, Joe, how you doing?" It's still guesswork. Even though the contactees say that, it's still guesswork. But anyway, Renee Hernandez is our guest tonight, and Renee has done some work with...
Ray.
Yeah, you broke up. Say that again.
Ray,
that's what I said. Ray, right?
No problem, Joe.
No, make sure I'm saying it right. Don't be calling your wrong name all day.
You do have said Renee, and it's Ray.
Oh, did I say Renee? I apologize. I thought I said Ray. I said Renee. I apologize.
You're getting old, Joe. You're getting old.
Ooh, yes, Ray Hernandez. I'm sorry about that. I don't know why I'm calling you Renee. You don't sound like no Renee I've ever heard. But anyway, we'll move on from that. Renee, I did it again. Look at that. Damn, what is this? It's going to be Freudian all night, isn't it? Okay, well, let's start all over here tonight. Lord, I love when it starts like this. Ray used to work with Christina Knowles, with most of my regular listeners should know Christina was our Massachusetts state director. She's retired. We'll just say she's semi-retired because I'm not going to ever let her fully retire, but I'll always torture her from beyond. But she was a great director, and Ray's case, I was doing something one afternoon. I was on the abduction at AT&T.net, which is where about 25% of our cases go to. And it was flooded full of cases, and I was going through, and I noticed Ray's name, I don't know, probably three, maybe four times in the list with different stuff. So when I had read, I think I had read the second one down, I said, well, this sounds interesting. And then Christina had called me up about accessing that site because that was a new site for Christina. And I said, sure, let me give you access to this. I said, why don't you start with these cases and look. And she got in there and did a great job and set them all up in categories and cases and everything. And right now there's a couple other directors working that particular email. But it's different for ICAR. We're not like any of the other contactee abductee groups out there. We don't get one case a week or five cases a month. No. Yeah, when we started, not today. Today we're very well connected with contactees around the world. Current contactee investigation list is around 18,000, maybe closer to 19,000. Membership base, I think, is sitting almost around 46, 47,000. So we're not your typical UFO organization. It's a much different thing. But then again, it makes it hard because we do get inundated with a lot of BS these days. So you're wading through a lot of stuff. And then, we're a little stricter than most places as well. And it's one of the things when I was reading through Ray's letter that he had sent me right after Christina resigned, I was like, let me find out about – well, we'll give you all a website right now and y'all can go check it out. It's contactee.org. But we're going to be talking about this as we go through the show. But Ray sent me an interesting letter. Was it yesterday, Ray, the day before? Not wanting to beat around the bush about what he was and what his experience was and all this, which, by the way, I wanted to say that takes a lot of courage. And I was going to say something else with G-rated show, but it takes a lot of courage. And because, frankly, anybody talking about anything they've experienced or been involved with in this field can be harsh, especially what I see what you do for a living, man. Lord have mercy. I don't even know how you do that. It's Lord. I couldn't work for them. I'd have to go find something else. I'm not good with that kind of authority. But anyway, we're going to get into this. I'm going to let Ray come in and tell you about Free and some other stuff. And then maybe in a little while we'll talk a little bit about him personally. But Ray, first off, what first off made you want to even contact anybody? I mean, what was it that said, okay, you know what? I'm going to write to these crazy alien people.
Well, Joe, let me give a little background about myself.
Take your time.
Yeah, I came here from Cuba when I was 5 years old, in 1961. My parents were factory workers. My father worked 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, making minimum wage. My mother worked 10 hours a day, 5 days a week, making minimum wage. At the age of 11, I started working, which is basically selling newspapers. And I've worked ever since. The town that I grew up in is West New York, New Jersey. Back then, when I was younger, it was a factory town. It was basically you had an embroidery factory, and then you had an apartment building, and then an old two-story, two-family house. It was basically it's a factory town. And so that was the environment I grew up in. I did not, when I was young, I didn't care about academics. I was basically all the time outside playing basketball and goofing off. But I was born with certain, you know, gifts that I could remember things fairly easy. And I did well at school without ever doing any homework and without ever studying.
Isn't that an amazing thing, by the way? It drives what reason I'm saying is it drives my friends and family, even my co-host, crazy, because I'll see something and I'll remember. Like we do, we have polls, 12 or 14 polls we do every Saturday. I could tell you the numbers in the polls for like the last 10 weeks, man. It just stays in my head. Don't ever let me see a number. I don't think it ever goes away. But go ahead and interrupt you.
Well, that was a long time ago, Joel, not now.
Well, my memory's not as good as it used to be, but go ahead.
And then I got admitted into Rutgers College, which is you know, a pretty decent school, in a state school in New Jersey. I did very, very well there academically. And then I went and worked for 3 years at the University of California at Berkeley. And after that, I went to Cornell for a master's. And then I got a National Science Foundation PhD fellowship, which you could apply to any university in the United States. And I got admitted into MIT and to Harvard. But I decided to do my PhD at Berkeley. And then I did all my coursework. I did pretty much straight A's in all my graduate studies. And then when I was writing my dissertation, I was at the New School for Social Research in Manhattan. My now deceased ex-wife had a brain aneurysm. And I had two little boys. Her sister that was still in high school was living with us. Her mother had just recently retired. So I basically had to give up my academic career and just work full time. And so I worked in various capacities for the City of New York and the New York City Metropolitan Transportation Authority. And then I went to work for the City University of New York University as a director of an environmental program for many years there. And then eventually I went to law school and I became an attorney. And I currently have worked for the last 15 years as an estate tax attorney with the IRS in Miami, Florida. So I deal with the inheritance tax that pretty soon you're going to have to pay, Joe. You know, individuals that when they die with net assets of more than $5 million.
Ooh, so, I don't worry about that part.
So that's my job. I've been doing it for 15 years. It's pretty boring, but it pays the bills.
Hey, you can do it. Look, more power.
Yeah. And, you know, the good part is I get to work at home. I have my caseload at home.
That's
and,
awesome.
You know, it's not a high-pressure job. But more importantly, for the audience, I was a complete atheist. Even though I've been married to my current wife now for over 20 years, she's Catholic. I was raised sort of like a pseudo-Catholic. I was baptized, I had my communion, and nothing else. Never went to church, and my parents were not religious.
I could say that, Lord. Parents weren't all that religious, but they made me do. You know, it's just a funny thing, by the way. There's a lot of contactees that are Catholic, and I'll talk to you about that later in the show. But
yeah,
it's they made me go through everything, man. I mean, I got all the extra names. I think about, what is it, Joseph Francis Paul Montaldo. And I'm like, come on, man, confirmation, communion. And then when I was dating this girl, I was talking to my mom about maybe getting married. She's like, oh, no, you got to go see the church. I'm like, get the hell out of here. I said, first off, I was like 16 at the time. I'm like, that's not going to happen.
Well, let me tell you a little side story there, Joe. My parents signed me up for a confirmation class, not because they knew much about it, because they wouldn't ever confirm, but because a lot of the other parents said, oh, you need to put your kid in confirmation class. So what happened was I went to the first couple of days in September, and then all of a sudden I skipped the next 6 months and I showed up in March. And all of a sudden, I think it was like 12 years old or something like that, here comes this nun, you know, approaches me, who are you? I said, you know, I told her my name. I said, I'm in your class. And so she starts grabbing my ear and starts to yank me out. And me being a street kid, you know, right from New York City, that area. I just slapped her head back and I told her a curse, and I walked right out. So that was my my blessing with the Catholic Church there, and why I stayed an atheist.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was like, I was in second grade or something. They actually threw me out of Catholic school my first time anyway, and because they said I was violent. Only because these guys used to bully on two of my friends, and one day I just got tired of it and went to kicking ass. And anyway, it was enough to get me not ass back. But it was funny because I would hear some days the nuns would be sitting out there at lunch having lunch, and we'd all be sitting on the ground, and they would be telling us stories and stuff out of the Bible about wicked ways and this and that, you know, just typical religious stuff. And then every now and then, one of them would talk about something really weird in the sky. Like one lady was talking about she had been staying at the Vatican for training. She was there for 17 days. And out of that 17 days, 11 days, they saw something in the sky. And she said it was so funny because all the new people, they were all like, oh, my God. But she said the people in the Vatican itself were just very nonchalant about it, like it's just an irregular occurrence, which I was kind of, wow, really? Okay, I never really thought of it like that. But since then, I've actually talked to quite a few people over there that are either live in Vatican City or around, and they say it's fairly regular sightings over there, and it just seems to be one of those things. At least it's not signs and portents in the sky, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, four horsemen flying across.
Joe, the reason I said that was just to put a framework of where my head was at, you know, 2 years ago. Now I have more faith in God and the spirit world and life after death than any Catholic priest in Miami, Florida, where I live. So let me tell you a little bit about how all this started, okay?
Okay.
In 2012, in March, this was on a Saturday, we had a Jack Russell Terrier, almost 17 years old. She was taking a whole bunch of medications. She was taking diuretics, even Viagra for her heart. And, you know, once in a while I would pop a couple of those drops in my mouth, you know, to keep me going and stuff. But that was a little joke, Joey.
No, I was listening.
Anyway, she was an old dog. She was like our first child. You know, we loved her a lot. And then all of a sudden she had a stroke, okay? Half of her body was completely paralyzed. We had a friend came over and, you know, saw her, the condition that she was. So that was Saturday evening. Sunday morning, my wife woke up early, 5:30 in the morning, 6 o'clock. She picked up our dog. She was still totally paralyzed. She couldn't move. She, like, picked her up a little bit more. She, like, dropped her a little bit. She just couldn't move at all. So she picked her up to bring her outside to go to the bathroom. On Monday, we were going to be bringing her to the vet to put her to sleep because she wasn't in any distress. She just looked very, very confused. But so what happened was when she got down the stairs, she saw this object. It was an object that was 3 feet across, 2 feet across and 3 feet in height. It looked like an upside down U, okay, an upside down U, metallic color. And all of a sudden, my wife, being the good Catholic that she is, knelt down and started praying. And all of a sudden, these two green lasers just shot out from this object on my wife and the dog. All of a sudden, my wife, you know, freaked out and started yelling, Ray, Ray, Ray. And I was like, you know, leave me alone, leave me alone. You know, I want to sleep. She goes, come down here. And I was like basically fighting with her for 10 minutes. You know, I wanted to sleep. It was Sunday morning. It was 6 o'clock in the morning, and she didn't tell me what it was. I thought it was like a cockroach or something like that, you know. So anyway, she comes upstairs, and she literally drags me off of bed. And I was pissed. You know, I said, you know, this better be good, you know. So anyway, when I got downstairs, I didn't see what she saw. What I saw was a floating energy object. It was roughly the same dimensions, you know, 2 to 3 feet wide, 1 foot to 2 feet tall, and it was pure energy, multicolored. Not like a rainbow where you see the distinct colors. It was all blended in, all these colors, and it was flashing, it was like vibrating like energy. And then I reacted in a way that for many, many months I never realized, you know, why I did that. But what I did was basically I stared at it, I waved my hand at it, and I said, ah, bullshit. I walked up the stairs, I got into bed, I folded my hands, and I looked straight at the ceiling. For 15 minutes, I looked straight at the ceiling. All of a sudden, 15 minutes later, I felt like the hypnotist said, wake up, kid. And they, you know, the fingers are snapped, and all of a sudden, I woke up to the reality. I ran downstairs, and I was like, you know, what the, you know what, you know, was happening. And then when I got down there, I saw my wife jumping up and down, jumping up and down. The angels cured her. The angels cured her. The angels cured her. And the dog was running after her. The dog was jumping up and down. And I was like, what the, you know what, okay? That was the beginning experience. After that, I started, you know, going to the internet like any normal logical person would do, you know, because before I, you know, aliens and UFOs and things like that, those were, you know, nuts that were interested in these type of topics. And all of a sudden I just became infatuated with these things. 3 months later, this was in May, the dog woke my wife up at 3:30. Instead of going to the outside to do what she needs to do, you know, in the back door, she was jumping on the front door like she wanted to go outside. We live in a cul-de-sac. The lots are very large, very quiet neighborhood. So my wife opened the front door, and she told me that she heard a noise, which was like a 747 jet right on top of her head. And I said, well, how long did it last? She said, it was like a minute. I said, well, was it very loud? She said, hell, it was loud. It was like a jet right on top of me. And then how long did it last? About a minute. Then what happened next? This huge, gigantic UFO, which is basically the size of a football stadium, appeared right in front of me. But it was like about 2 blocks away. But it was so large that it basically took up one side of the cul-de-sac to the other side of the cul-de-sac. And she said, oh, it was so angelic, so beautiful. The ends of it had colors just like the window panes of our church. It was so angelic, so beautiful. And I was like, you know, angelic? You saw a UFO and you're acting like this. He says, yes, yes, they're angels. So that was in May. Then several months later in June, she went to Mexico. That's where her family lives. And she stayed there in the state of Veracruz. She stayed there for about a month and a half. One day she was up on her roof. Her sister owned a house in downtown Veracruz, which has over 1 million people. And there she was at night, 9 o'clock at night, just looking up at the stars, you know, the sky, and just meditating on the night sky. Then all of a sudden she got this urge to try to call the UFO that she had seen. So a half hour she was trying to call this, you know, this UFO, but it never showed up. So, you know, about 10 o'clock or so, you know, she went downstairs. Okay. About an hour later, the 11 o'clock news, the lead story was that they had to shut down the airport of Veracruz for about an hour because this UFO was spotted above the airport. They had thousands of people that had taken photos and videos, and they had reporters all over the place. And I even verified it because I saw videos of it, and I saw the newspaper article on it. So the next day, on a Sunday, her niece was baptized, and that's one of the reasons why she had gone down there, and that was the topic of conversation. And so she met up with a cousin of hers that she hadn't seen in a very, very long time. So the cousin said, you know, I see these things all the time. I even communicate with these beings. And then my wife was then told her all of what had happened to her. And then they said, okay, at 9 o'clock when we go home, we're going to summon a UFO. And it was like an agreement with my wife and her cousin. So her cousin went back to her town, which is down the coast. It was about a 3-hour drive. And my wife was going to stay with her other sister, which is basically in the mountains. So the route there was all, you know, through these hills and mountains to get up to the city of Jalapa, which is, you know, a big climate change. You're going up in elevation. There were two cars that went in that caravan. And in that car were a lot of her friends that she grew up with. There were several dentists. There were two attorneys. There was an architect, plus her two nieces that were two teenagers. Not at 9 o'clock, but at 9:30, a craft appeared. Descended from the sky, put down a blue beam in front of the lead car for about 10 or 15 minutes, and all of a sudden the blue beam left, and then it took off. And then when I was in Mexico, I interviewed four of the witnesses, and they all verified that information. Then my wife came back home. This was in late August. And then she never told me that story because she was just too embarrassed. Because, you know, to her it was like, you know, craziness. What happened was at that time I had seen this guy, Prophet Yahweh, on YouTube, who had summoned these crafts in the daylight, and it was like this little tiny speck bouncing around in the sky. And so a friend of mine had gotten all these parking tickets, and he was summoned into the court, and I said, look, give me all your parking tickets. I'm going to consolidate them into one. So you go one time to the court and take care of it. Where are you at? Oh, you know, I'm very close. I said, okay, fine. I'll go outside and I'll wait for you. It was about 9 o'clock at night, completely cloudy sky, and I'm waiting for him. And then I said, I was looking up in the sky, and I said, man, let me do what this guy, Prophet Yahweh, did, okay? So I started summoning the UFO that my wife had seen back in May. Oh, I want to see you, the beautiful craft, that huge craft with the beautiful colored stained glass windows at the edges. Oh, I want to see you. And then I turn around, did a 180 looking around, nothing. I repeat it again. I did that for 15 minutes. After 15 minutes, I was like, I'm, you know, going crazy here, okay? I'm really losing it this time, you know? And then when I was saying that to myself, right on top of my neighbor's house, a huge, gigantic craft, the size of a football stadium, appeared right on top of my neighbor's house, literally like 5 feet off of the rooftop. Didn't make any sound, didn't move at all. What it was thousands of oblong lights, which formed the shell, the outside shell of the craft, and the inside parts of the craft. So it wasn't materialized. It was just thousands of these long, oblong streaks. Immediately, I started calling for my daughter. At that time, she had just turned 10 years old. And I said, Shkaret, Shkaret. And so, you know, she heard me. She opened up the window. She said, what is it, Daddy? I said, there's a UFO out here. And I didn't use the word cloaked. I said, in hiding. So in less than 10 seconds, she was out there, you know. And because I had remembered that she told me, Daddy, you and Mommy have seen a UFO. Next time you guys see a UFO, let me know because I want to see it. And I wasn't even thinking, Joe. You know, I just reacted, you know. In hindsight, you don't want to get a little kid involved in this stuff. But, you know, I wasn't thinking properly.
Involved with it. Yeah. But go ahead. I'll put that down a little.
Yeah. So anyway, my daughter runs out, and she, you know, both of us are staring at this thing, almost looking straight up because it was so huge. And then she goes, Daddy, what is that? And I said, it's a UFO in hiding. You know, it's not fully material, you know. And then we were just watching it. But we were not scared at all. It's like entertainment, you know? It was like a light show that was putting on for us. Then about 10 minutes later, my friend shows up, not by himself, but with his wife, okay, and their 17-year-old daughter. And this guy is one of these hardcore Catholics, the ones that will do the rosary, you know, for 10 hours straight, you know? He's from Mexico, you know, he was trained that way, you know? Hardcore Catholic.
Yeah.
His wife is from Colombia, same thing. You know, she's 52, he's 48. Both of them are college graduates, and the 17-year-old was there as well. So what they started to do, they were like, what the hell is that? And I said, what do you think it is? I said, it's an Omni. You know, Omni in Spanish is UFO. Yeah. And they were like, no, it can't be. And they were coming up with all these possible explanations. Like, it's got to be lightning, you know. I said, lightning just above this house, you know. Oh, it's got to be the cars that were from the headlights that were blinking off of the cloudy sky. And I said, please, it's just above this house, and have you ever seen that before? And they were just on and on and on for like 10 minutes with all these possible explanations. Okay. Then all of a sudden, these entities that was in their craft was like, huh, you don't believe me, huh? You think we're screwing around? All of a sudden, that light pattern, approximately 90% of those lights dissipated, and they were replaced by stars, blinking stars. It was like 10 times the size of Venus, very large stars. And they would blink like 2 or 3 times in a second, very, very quickly, on and off, on and off, on and off, on and off, like that, blinking. But there were literally thousands of them all throughout the craft. And they would take turns concentrating in different parts of the craft. So everyone was like, oh, look at that area back there. Oh, look at here in the front. Look at that. It was like we were watching a 4th of July show. All we needed was the lounge chairs, a couple of cold Coronas, some sausage links, and that's it. We were entertained. That lasted for about another 10 minutes. Then my friends did something that I didn't realize for a very long time, I couldn't rationalize it. What they did was like, oh, we got things to do. I'll see you later. We got to go. Okay. And I was like, okay, bye-bye. Don't worry about those parking tickets. I'm going to do that motion for you. I'll give it to you tomorrow. That's not logical, Joe.
it's common, but it's not logical. No.
Okay. Yeah. You're seeing a once-in-a-lifetime event, and these people are acting like it's nothing, So anyway, my daughter and I, after they left, then we stayed watching this thing for another 15 minutes. The total time was approximately 45 minutes that we had this football stadium size craft literally 40 feet away from us. I mean, I could have gotten a pebble and hit it, the bottom parts of it. That's how close it was. And this is the house right next door to my house. So all of a sudden, I felt I was attacked by mosquitoes. And I was slapping my legs all over the place, and I was like, getting irritated. And then I told my daughter, I said, come on, let's get out of here. These mosquitoes are killing me. And then I grabbed her hand, and so we walked inside. About 5 minutes afterwards, my daughter goes to me, Daddy, there weren't any mosquitoes outside. And all of a sudden, I felt like the hypnotist snapped his fingers, like, wake up, sucker, And all of a sudden, I like, holy shit, what just happened, So I quickly ran. I got my camera. I got my video camera. I ran outside. Didn't even take like 20 seconds to get all that. And poof, nothing was there.
They go fast. They go fast, man.
It was totally gone. And these teenagers, they had a 17-year-old with her cell phone. Everybody had cell phones in their pockets. It didn't even once enter our mind to take any picture.
But that's awesome.
As a matter of fact, the neighbor even blinked the lights on in their living room because all of a sudden you had five people looking right at his house, And so they must have thought, what the hell are these people looking at, So I saw the light turn on. There was two people that were there. They looked at us, and all of a sudden they turned the light off. So, if you're thinking rationally, I would run over to them. I would say, look what's above your roof, But
that's part of it. It's when there's this stuff going on, they have we call it an empathic scan, but it's really a telepathic scan. It's probably intensified by something. Well, the Greys don't even need to intensify, but some of the other races do. But basically what it does is it leaves you in a passive sense. It's why when children sometimes you'll hear them say stuff, oh, look, my bug-eyed friends are here. Kids are very common. Most kids, if they're below the age of puberty starts, don't have a fear of aliens. There's no reason for them to. The aliens have always been nice to them. Anytime they're on board the ships, they're letting them play with other children and get involved with other stuff. Because most people don't realize it, but abductions start pre-birth anyway. So kids are used to this. It doesn't really change for most people until they hit puberty and then through their 20s, because that seems to be when any of the races that do abductions are getting involved. That seems to be when they do the stuff that we would consider to be less than friendly. But when you get into our ages, it's a whole different thing. It's just a whole entire different context. And so you're going through the awakening experience. It's one of the reasons they'll come sometimes when you call them.
Yes. Well, let me tell you what happened to me afterwards, Joe. Okay. Yes. Before this event, I was just on the internet, and I had purchased a whole bunch of UFO books. And the internet, all it did was just confuse me even more. Because you had one side was that they were devils. On the other side, they were gods, And then a whole bunch of stuff in the middle. And you had all these, reports and studies. And all it did was just confuse you more. But what had happened was after that event, I stopped cold reading all of those books. And listen to this, because this is really strange, Joe. I don't think you've ever heard something like this before. For the next 4 months, all I did was to read books on near-death experiences and on consciousness studies. But not the metaphysical consciousness studies. It's the more science-oriented consciousness studies. And, for example, I would order 10 books from Amazon, five of each, five near-death experience, five consciousness studies. When I was down, after I read eight of them and I was down to two, I would order 10 more.
Well, I tell you what, Ray, you would love
my Oregon State director. You just described her trip. No, not being funny. What you're talking about, when I'm telling you things aren't uncommon, what you just described to him, I've heard that before as well.
Yeah.
I try to explain this to people. We're not like MUFON. We're not like Starborn. We're not like any of the organizations. We literally have over 18,000 contactees we have a database and a knowledge that far exceeds anybody in the field right now. And it's mm-hmm. it's just, we're kind of stingy with it. I'm not going to lie. We do release more than we should because of abduction criteria, but you know, you start listening to people as they go along, and you know, you can tell the signs of someone pre-awakening, someone going through the awakening, someone who's not going to remember their first 25 or 30 years of abductions, only from whatever point they think it started back. But to be blunt about this, there's no such thing as a first-time contact date, unless you were in your mother's stomach. There just isn't. And anybody under deep regression, you'll always find that that's the truth. Even Travis Walton is not a one-timer. And we've talked about that live on the show. You can listen to that for yourself. The point being is we had all these one-time cases, and we started investigating and finding out that, no, they're not one-time. There was other stuff that went on with the Allagashes, with pretty much everybody who's ever said they were one-time abducted. We found out later on that wasn't true. Or they had other kind of experiences earlier that we didn't find out until about later, which is weird, but it does make a lot of sense, since we do think they have
done family. Well, there was a purpose to this instruction that I got. Okay? There was a mm-hmm. purpose at the end. What had happened was that I was totally consumed, not with reading ufology books or contactee books.
Yes.
It was only near-death experience and consciousness studies. And it was 12 hours a day, Joe, 12 to 18 hours a day. Okay. I would be reading and reading, and myself having an academic background, I would read through these things, you know, fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. I must have read over 300 books that I ordered through Amazon and through Kindle during that time period. Now, what happened was, in December, approximately 4 months later, I had never spoken to anyone. Only my wife knew that I was reading these two types of books. In December, a week before the Christmas holidays, my daughter had a high fever for a couple of days. And my wife is the one that always brought her to the doctors. So I brought her to the doctor that Friday. And so the very first person I ever talked to about near-death experiences was my daughter's pediatrician. And it wasn't intentional. It was just all of a sudden I'm there and it just comes out. Excuse me, doctor, have you ever heard of near-death experiences? And she looks at me, you know, her eyes pop out, you know. I said, excuse me, doctor, I didn't mean to offend you, but I've just finished reading 300 books on this topic. Out of those books, I would say 75 books were written by medical doctors, and out of those, at least 25 to 30 were written by professors in medical schools. And then she says, no, I'm not offended by your question. How did you know I had one? So then she goes on to explain how when she was 10 years old in Venezuela, she died. In the hospital, she had a heart problem. She saw her body underneath her. She saw the doctors. She saw the nurse, what they were doing to her. Then she floated right through the wall. And then she, in the office, this doctor told me verbatim for 15 minutes what she heard between her father and her mother. Verbatim, okay? And then she said all of a sudden that she floated right back through the wall, and she saw the doctor was doing that electric shock treatment. I forgot what it's called, the defibrillator, whatever. And it wasn't working. All of a sudden he took the big syringe, plunged it into her heart, and all of a sudden she fell like whoop, like back into her body. When she woke up, her parents, she was back in the hospital. About an hour later or so after she had recovered, she told her parents that she had a strange dream. Then she told her parents verbatim exactly what she had overheard and saw. And she said, also, there was a lady right across from me. She had a red sweater with a little girl, you know, running around. And they were like, how did you know that? You know, not only were you dead, you were in the room next door in the emergency room. And then she said, oh, by the way, the doctor, 6'3" with blonde hair. The nurse, she's 5 foot tall with short butch haircut. She's got 1950s glasses on. About 15 minutes later, gets who walks in to see how she's doing. The doctor and the nurse, exactly how she describes it. after that event took place, I was like, holy, you know what? What the hell is going on? You know, the very first person I talked to, I hit a home run. I hit the lottery, you know. The next day, on a Saturday, we were at a church dinner at a church right here called St. John's Newman in Miami, Florida. My wife sat next to this lady from Mexico because they were friends, and I sat next to her husband, who I never met before. Again, out of the blue, the second person I ever talked to about this, okay, I didn't even know the guy. All of a sudden, I thought, hey, have you ever had a near-death experience? Ever heard about it? You know, and after I said it, I was like, what the hell did I just say that, you know? But it came out. The guy looked at me, his eyeballs pop out, and he says, my mother died a year ago right in my arms. And then he went on and told me his mother's near-death experience. She had died for 45 minutes before she was resuscitated. When she came to in the recovery room, she told him the dream that she had. She repeated verbatim what he was telling her. She was floating above her body. And you told me this, you told me that, you told me that. You were giving mouth-to-mouth CPR. All of a sudden, this big, tall, you know, black fellow, 300 pounds, comes into the door, followed by this young white woman, blonde hair, long blonde hair. And they put me on this the bed that they use for the paramedics. They were giving me the oxygen and CPR. She was floating above the ambulance. All of a sudden, she got sucked into a tunnel. She was into the tunnel. She saw the light. And waiting for her was her deceased husband, who had died several years before. Then he introduced her to God, who said, hey, look, it's not your time. You know, get back. Exactly like all those books that I had read. Okay? That was on a Saturday. Okay? Again, I hit the lottery 2 days in a row. I should be so lucky. The next day, on a Sunday, I always visit my parents on the weekends. My father's 80, now he's 84, but back then he was 82. Total atheist. I don't even remember him being in a church, okay? And he's very, very sick, you know, he's still bedridden. So I said, okay, come on, Pop, get up, you know, I'm going to tell you something. So, you know, it took him like a half an hour to get him out of bed, et cetera. So we sat down in the porch outside with my mother. It was evening. It was about 8 o'clock or so. And then I told him the story of what had happened the last 2 days. I didn't tell him about the crap because I didn't want to freak him out. But I just told him what happened Friday, what happened Saturday. Then he goes, that happened to me. And I said, say what? He goes, remember 15 years ago when I had that open heart surgery? I was floating above my body. I saw all the doctors. I saw my chest right open. I went to the tunnel. I saw the light. Okay, and then after I got through the tunnel and I went right into the light, my parents were waiting for me and my brother. All of them had been previously deceased. They presented him to an entity that he identified as God. This entity then went and gave him what is common in the literature as a life review. He told me that he felt that he was up there for 20 years because God showed him all the good that he had done and all the bad that he had done. And he saw that experience not only from his own brain, but also from the brain of the other person that is being impacted. So if you're like got into a fight and you were, you know, a 10-year-old kid and you're fighting with this kid on the ground, you know, you not only see that fight from your brain, from your mind, you also experience that fight from the brain of the other kid. Okay? And when he told me all of that, I was like, you know, oh, my God, what is happening? You know, 3 days in a row, this thing happened. Okay. On my way home that night, I looked up at the sky. You know, night, it was nighttime already. And I looked up at God, and I looked up at these ETs. And I said, I congratulate you. In a four-month period, you have managed to get an individual who was a total atheist, a total material rationalist, okay, and converted him into someone that had more belief in God, more belief in the spirit world and life after death than any Roman Catholic priest in all of Florida. Okay? And that's the God's honest truth. That's what happened. Okay? Since that day, Joe, there have been tons of paranormal experiences that have happened mainly to me, but some to my wife. Okay? Let me jump over a whole bunch of these experiences, okay, and get to free, okay? Do we have still time to move forward? Hello?
Sorry about that. I'm sorry. I was doing something. I didn't want you to hear us.
Oh, no. It's okay, Joe. No.
We got a good 10 minutes before break, so take your time. Don't feel rushed, okay? And I'll let you
okay.
know when the break, so don't worry about it.
All right. Excellent. All of that, Joe, what I know now, again, I've never seen a non-human intelligent being. Okay? I've never seen them. Only one time I had a communication with them. And I'll go into that in a couple of minutes, okay? So that has been basically my experience. Tons of paranormal experiences that have happened since then. But in terms of actually seeing a being, that has never happened. And in terms of getting a download or communication, that only happened once. Let me explain that, okay? I had just come a week before from my first and only UFO conference. And that took place in Sebring, Florida. That was in May of last year. Okay. So up until May of last year, I had only spoken with one person, which you already previously mentioned, and she had informed me not to, you know, go into the mentioning of her name, you know, over the air.
Yeah.
And I was and I'll respect that.
Yeah, no, that's a good thing.
Yeah. And so that was my only outlet, Joe. I mean, you can't talk to friends. My wife completely understood me, but she was like, you know, why are you wasting all this time with all this UFO and T stuff? Here you got a family, you got a daughter, you know, but she completely understood me, okay? So anyway, we had come back from this, managed to convince her after like a whole month of persuading her to go to this conference with me. And at this conference, we heard a lot of individuals speak. That was the first time I met Kathleen Martin, Denise Stoner, Grant Cameron spoke. Ex-Minister of Defense from Canada was there.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, was a loaded Linda Moulton Howe, not Linda Moulton Howe, Paola.
Paola Harris.
Harris spoke. You know, it was a very good conference. And I had never been to any of this stuff, you know. I had read a lot of this, you know, previous to my experience with that huge craft. Since that day, as I told you, I never read any of that UFO stuff anymore or contactee stuff. I've never read any of that experience book afterwards, after that me winning the lottery 3 days in a row, you know?
Yeah.
I've never asked anyone else, you know, because I know it's for real, Joe. It's like you just know something, you know? Huh. I know this phenomenon was for real.
It's
important
to know it's real because it'll help you deal with it in your everyday life. But you got to know about it because it's never quite what everybody thinks it is. It's really strange.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so but basically in terms of what I know is real is that I know near-death experiences are real. I know that a spirit world exists. I know that we just don't disintegrate, you know, after death, that there is something called the spirit, you know, that exists after you die. I know it for a fact.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a big argument in my family because my grandfather died 9 different times from 5 different heart attacks on the table. He says there's nothing afterwards. Now, my uncle, who died twice on the table, swears there's something is. 2 of my cousins, one who had terminal cancer they thought would never, ever make it through it, died, came back, and now 15 years later is healthier than I am. But he's also a contactee. But he believes in something entirely different. He believes we just step from one to the other. That's why what they started doing, and we were part of the study because I do hypnosis, but what they started doing is they started regressing people to see people who have had past life experiences to see what they experienced, and then they would regress that individual or a different individual to the moment of birth. You'd be amazed how identical these two sound. Oh, I recognize my mother and my father and my cousin and my niece. Both of them say the same thing. Oh, there was a tunnel. I felt like I was being forced in or pushed in or pulled in. The experiences are so close that you just got to kind of wonder. Now, before anybody starts writing to either Ray or ourselves, I'm not saying this happens to everybody. I'm sure some people go on the other side and get judged or whatever. But it does sound like a fair amount of people
let me tell you, Joe, what I learned from the near-death experience literature. Approximately 1 out of 4 individuals that have been resuscitated have a near-death experience. So it's only one out of four. And then there are different categories, different steps, different modules in the near-death experience phenomenon. Very few people have the full spectrum. You know, depending on what author, what researcher, you know, it could be up to 12 or 15 different modules. But so not everyone has them all. Some people, like, for example, the pediatrician, just had the out-of-body experience, you know. She didn't go into the tunnel with the light and all of that other stuff, you know. So it's very different for everyone. But one interesting book, Joe, that you just brought up was a book by Kenneth Ring, who has been for 40 years now, now retired professor of psychiatry at the University of Connecticut. And his expertise is near-death experience. He's one of the top three academics that have researched this phenomenon. And in 1997, he did a study, an academic study, where he compared abductees with individuals that have had near-death experiences. Now, again, this is, you know, an academic with, you know, many, many years as a professor, okay? The results that he got back, Joe, was virtually identical. You're talking about the same person, okay? I don't want to spend time over the air talking about the specifics, but the book is titled The Omega Project, okay? And that was the book was published in 1997 by Dr. Kenneth Ring. And this is a bona fide, you know, professor with tons of academic articles, many, many academic books. And he's is known as one of the top three near-death experience academics in the world. Okay, and it's a book that everyone that is interested in this phenomenon of the contactee phenomenon needs to read, because exactly what you were just telling me, Joe, in terms of the connection, you know, with the spirit world and contactees, you know, he illustrated that direct connection with there, because how these people turned out and their outcomes and their worldview, it's almost exactly the same. Okay. Now let me sort of give a sort of like the beginning introduction before you go into your break.
Go ahead. Okay? You got about 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay. I had just come back with this event with my wife. Okay. I'm driving at Highway 836, which is a major thoroughfare that goes right across Miami, central Miami, into the downtown area. And in the morning, it's basically stop and go. Okay. At 8:30 in the morning, it was total, you know, stop-and-go traffic. I got what I called that then was an ET telegram, okay? And what it was it wasn't like a voice that I heard, like a person's voice, a different voice in my head. No, it was just like a thought that got put in my head, okay? Very detailed thought. And then what I saw was an actual movie associated with that thought. And the movie that I saw was like The Price is Right without Vanna White. You know, it was the roulette wheel spinning around, and all the different colors were different paranormal events, near-death experience, out-of-body, consciousness studies, you know, ETs, you know, the spirit world, all of these remote viewing, all of these paranormal events were spinning around with different colors. In the middle were the contactees, myself specifically, just looking out as this thing was spinning around. What was holding everything together was quantum physics, okay? Mm-hmm. That was the vision, okay? Then the thought that came into my head was I had to do a documentary that talked about the relationship between these ETs, the spirit world, and quantum physics, okay? All of a sudden, I'm almost freaking out, okay? On the phone at 8:30 in the morning, I called this friend of ours, which we both know, in Boston, mm-hmm. And I called her, you know, she's like, what's going on? You know, and then I told her what happened. And then she said, don't freak out. You know, if you need to go to the side of the road, do that. I said, no, I'm not freaking out. It's just like, what the, you know, what just happened, you know? And then she said it's happened to her, that it's not very, very frequent, but it does happen to contactees, mm-hmm. Okay? Maybe we could spill into the break now, Joe.
Yeah, we're gonna go in just a second. You know, it's one of the reasons we do what we do. iCross is the only
organization out there with comparison studies done on 18,000 contactees. Let me tell you what, you'd be freaking amazed at some of the similarities, and you'll be freaking amazed at some of the stuff that people consider to be extraordinary that's just average that happens to a lot of them. It's really, really strange. There's a lot of stuff that goes on, but then there's levels. You know, it's hard to make contactees understand that a good chunk of what's in their head isn't actually what was going on. Some of it's because humans have a bad thing about, one, making it about themselves. Two, they can only understand what they can understand, and everything else they have to make out of what they understand, because some of this stuff is simply beyond the realm of our understanding right now. Humans, we're evolved, and we're evolving fast, but not at the rate that some of these aliens are. We're a good distance, and trying to understand how they see some things and why they do some things is just hard to understand. The real bottom line is, if anybody listening tonight, because, you know, I get a lot of people who write to me that they're angels, a lot of people who write to me they're demons, a lot of people who write that they're benevolent and kind and peace and loving and rot, that write that they're going to eat us. I'll tell you this for sure. Out of 30 years of research, I'll guarantee you this. They're not here to enlighten the species, and they're not here to wipe the species out, because they could have done either one any time in the last 50,000 years, and they haven't. I've always told all researchers this. When you look at extraterrestrials, you judge them by their actions. Actions speak louder than words. The fact that we're having this conversation says they're not anti-alien, you know, us knowing about them, and they're not here to wipe us out. And as far as saving us, you can say that, but if you take a look around at the planet right now, you have to wonder what the bleep are they doing. So either one of those are not good things. Why don't you give them, and then, Ray, why don't you give them a website or something before we go to break right quick?
Yeah, where's, sure. In the next segment, I'm going to be talking about a new organization that no one has ever done before, the objectives that we want. The organization is called the Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters, and our website is contactee.org. That's contactee. That's contactee.org, and it's O-R-G because we are a not-for-profit entity. We have our nonprofit status from the state of Florida, and we're in the process of getting our 501c3 status. And again, I'm very excited about what we're doing with free, because no one, including your organization, Joe, is doing the diversity of projects that we're doing.
You better be careful with that, man. We've got like 60 projects running.
I was setting it up, Joe.
No, we got at least at any one time, we've got 30 projects that have been running for 5 years or longer, my friend. And then we've got about another 40 on top of that. What I'm saying is, I doubt, because I was reading y'all's manifesto the other day, I can tell you most of what you're doing, we're already doing. We've just been doing this a really, really long time.
Well,
and
it's hard to make people understand
that.
Later on, when I discuss the details, you'll see what the differences are, Joe. You know,
that's always good.
Because there are subtle differences here.
Well, no, that's a good thing, because we endorse four or five other UFO. I'm sorry, UFO. I don't want to use the word UFO. We endorse four or five other really good alien abduction research groups, and a couple of single people like Yvonne Smith and Mary Rodwell, which is in y'all's group. We endorse people like that. Anybody who's doing really good research, we endorse, and we will help when we can, because the studies right now, like the blood type studies and the studies about employments, job histories, paranormal and stuff like that, no one's ever done before, ever before us. No one's doing them right now, actually. And these have very pertinent information when it comes to this particular field.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot more than that. But anyway, we're going to go to break. Y'all get over there and check out the website. Y'all can call in later. Maybe I'll open the phone lines unless I have a little chat with Ray later on
in
the show.
Joe, as a note, it's due to be open on June the 15th.
Well, check it out,
guys. We're still working on the details of it. It's like one-third constructed.
Yeah,
so
the
just give us a
you know what.
Yeah. Our web developer got ill for a while, for about a month, so we're a little bit behind. But basically, if you do go in there and it is open while we're working on it, it's basically one-third complete. So,
matters,
but at least go in there and take a look at it.
Well, I was reading one of the people in the virtual auditorium. Ada says it looks like a great website. She was just in there, apparently. And I just one thing about the Internet, everything's instant. I love that. But anyway, we're going to take a break right quick, ladies and gentlemen. I'm speaking with Ray Hernandez. We'll be back in about 10 minutes. I want everyone to play soon. Remember, go over to contact.org, check it out, tell us what you think. It's only a third completed, so just remember that. Keep that in the back of your mind. And, guys, have a little fun. And remember, be nice to your friends. I'll see you all in about 8 minutes.
You're listening to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
If you are listening to the show and wish to join us in the chat room, visit paltalk.com. Go to the social issues, select other, and enter the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Hello, this is Angela Thomas with a message about living life to the fullest. As a psychic clairvoyant, I often give insights to one's career path, financial situation, or relationship. Whether one is happy or not in their current situation, where he or she is right now is an important part of learning valuable lessons that can lead to fulfilling one's life purpose. If I can offer you insights, feel free to contact me at 636-278-2272, again 636-278-2272, or visit my website, angelathomas.org. I'm considered a psychic, so I provide accurate and detailed psychic readings for individuals as well as groups. Remember, no matter what influences your life at the moment, live life to the fullest. Stay in gratitude, count your blessings, and prepare yourself for more opportunities around the corner. I'm Psychic Angela Thomas, and my website is angelathomas.org.
The paranormal, ghosts, spirits, demons,
reincarnation,
past lives,
the afterlife,
divination,
exorcisms,
witchcraft,
the unseen.
He's psychic medium Chris George.
And he's Victor the Voice Furman.
We are Second Sight Radio. Join us live
every Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time
on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Tune in to The Mind Cemetery with your hosts Chip and Nicole every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Exclusively on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We delve into UFOs, abductions, ghosts, aliens, conspiracies, and cryptozoology.
And how could you ever forget about those creepy topics you won't hear on your local news?
This is where I would insert my obligatory skeptical statement. The Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on Facebook. Also, check us out on our website, mindcemetery.com, for show updates and the critically acclaimed Mind Cemetery blog.
It's not critically acclaimed, but you should check it out anyway, mindcemetery.com.
Truth is reality. The connection is you. Check out Catherine Buckley on Truth Connections Radio, Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on 107.7 FM, the Paranormal Radio Network.
I'm Stephanie Benetti, and along with Joe Montaldo, we host News on the Flip Side. Come join us every Saturday night at 7 p.m. Central for our three-hour program. We have opinions on everything, and we're not afraid to share them. False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new is never on the news. but you can find it here with News on the Flip Side. Remember, don't be politically correct. Just be correct. Join us.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
I had had enough.
Well, you drove out there into the middle of nowhere and had some sort of loud verbal display challenging E.T. in general out in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was doing. I actually had a pistol in my hand at the time. I was really ticked off. When I was having this fit, I was waving the gun in the air, okay, and I had this fit. And at this moment, I said, okay.
Was a Louisiana man named Montaldo. Folks around called him Six Gun Joe. Worked with ICAR, don't you know? Investigating UFOs. Out for a drive with a gal one night, they stopped to check out the reporting site. When an alien lit right there on the ground, commenced to throw in his weight around. Now, old Six Gun didn't take too kindly to that kind of thing. Especially without Vaseline or anything like that, you know. Seriously. Well, Six Gun looked that critter right in the eye and said, any last wish before you die, y'all? Reached for his gun, quick as a twitch, and said, fill your claw, you son of a bitch. Now, a legend spread across the land about this pistol-waving man. But if you're from space or from Earth below, you don't give no lip to Six Gun Joe.
Welcome to UFO Undercover with your host, Joe Montaldo.
We had that time lapse there.
I know we did. Good evening, everyone, and welcome back. I hope y'all are enjoying the first hour of Joe Montaldo Show and the UFO Undercover. I hope y'all enjoyed it. We're going to be getting into some more stuff here in a few minutes. I'm going to let Ray pick up right here where we left off just before we went to the break. But guys and girls, remember, they're going to be working on this site. It's contacte.org. Go over, check it out. When you know, put it in your list and check in from time to time and see what's up. We'll probably have him back in the near future to do some updates. Kathleen's pretty regular on the network, and so is Mary, so you'll probably hear it from them as well. So they're pretty regular people on the network. They come speak a lot with us. So anyway, we'll get to that in a minute. Also, I've seen a couple of IMs at the beginning. Carolyn, I don't know who told you that, but it is true. About 2 years ago, you know, I had advanced degrees in avionics and electronics in the Navy. And I had talked with a friend of mine. Actually, he called me. He listens to the show. He teaches at a college. He teaches, and he said, you know, Joe, your knowledge of electronics and avionics and things is pretty good. He said, why don't you come down and take a pre-BS test? So I took the test, put up $2,500 of my own hard-earned money, had to take about a year of online to make sure I knew what I knew because I just wanted to make sure before they signed off on it. But, yes, I will have my bachelor's in applied sciences and advanced avionics and electronics. Yeah, I know, man. Huh? Took me to 50 to get the damn thing, but hey. the problem, and by the way, for anybody who writes to me, I'm not going to use it for anything. It's going to go on a pretty little plaque on the wall with a bunch of other BS things I got. And it's just going to sit there because I don't think I'm going back to work on electronics. I don't really see it. I do like avionics, but it does give me a unique perspective in this field. As far as I know, I'm the only researcher in ufology with advanced degrees in avionics or electronics. Boy, I'd make the perfect UFO hunter. Huh? We'll leave that to Darryl soon. Let him be the alien hunter. I've seen that. The reason I brought that up is Denise, I've seen that. You know what? I haven't had Darryl on in about a year and a half. I'll give him a call and have him come on, and we'll see what he's up to date doing. I got a couple of guests coming on before that. We're going to be doing a couple of book series over the next few weeks. You know, Matters is going to be doing a little admin for us over at UFO on the Cover on Facebook, and maybe I'll get him to send her the books. Yeah, and, you know, look, guys, I get a lot of books. I can't read that much, Jesus. And Linda's out of town, so she usually does the majority of the reading. hey, it's tough, you know, it's just tough. I mean, we get a lot of material coming across, and I have very finite time these days. Oh, and also, too, I had seen this a couple of days ago on my Facebook page. It's actually part two of the blood type study is almost finished. As far as the percentages of who's who and who's not, this brings the total count up to about, I think it's 9,100 people that have taken this study, participated in the study. It doesn't really so much change to percentages of O negative versus positive, negative versus positive versus the different bloods. But it did change a couple other things, which I found really interesting, very strange and really interesting. But anyway, probably mid-July we'll go ahead and publish it, and then we'll probably do a show on it in August sometime, and maybe I'll give Coast a call. And usually when we debut stuff like that, I'll give them a call if we do it on there. And we'll see where it goes. It's a very interesting study there. And before I give Ray the mic, who was that, Ginger? Ginger, is that what you, Ginger? Actually, on the blood type thing, I know we've been doing this a lot lately because we've been getting a lot of stuff about this. Right now, O negative is the majority. Rh negative is totally the majority of contactees. But, you know, I always like to warn people about this. Just because there's less positive than negatives in the studies, don't think you're not going to get abducted if you got positive blood, because they will still take it. they're very interested in something to do with the Rh negative, but they still abduct positives too. It's not like they're not abducting everybody. It's just more of one than the other for some reason. I would have liked to have known, if we could have started this study like 50 years ago or 100 years ago, it would have been nice to see in the beginning if there was more positive than negatives. I guess we'll never know. Maybe in the future somebody will know if the study runs long enough. It's, 5-6 years old now. So maybe that will know. I'd love to know. I really would. It's one of those things. But anyway, enough about all that. Ray, welcome back, man.
Well, okay. Thank you, Joe.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Hernandez is back with us.
Okay. Hello, everyone. I'm sure everyone enjoyed their little break here. I did. I had a pizza. Yeah, and
These guys would rather we never take a break. If it was up to them, we'd be allowed breaks, man. Most of our shows end up being three-hour shows and stuff. They ruthless, man. These audiences are tough. They don't want to get them.
Well, I could talk about our organization for another 3 hours, but I'll try to be concise, Joe.
No, take your time.
Let me give the background again. Okay, mm-hmm. Here I was. I had gotten this ET download. I knew nothing about quantum physics outside of the books that I had read on consciousness studies. Several of the books and studies that I had read were written by quantum physicists. But, I'm terrible in math and not a science person. And then in terms of documentary, I just hold on a used a camcorder. So here I was, you know, what the hell am I going to do with this, you know? The next night, I got an email from Mary Wadwell. And for the folks that are not familiar with Mary Wadwell, she is one of the preeminent researchers in the contactee experience, both in terms of the abduction phenomenon, but also, you know, general contact. People have had contact with non-human intelligence. And she's out of Australia. And what had happened, Joe, was back in must have been in December, I had sent my email out to like 15 different individuals. You were one of them. That was when you referred it to our mutual friend. So anyway, Mary responded and she said, "Dear Ray, I am so sorry I lost your email from 4 months ago. I've just found it, and I want to apologize for it. But your story of seeing that huge craft with your daughter is extremely fascinating. Maybe, you know, you want to talk about it or communicate about it." And then I responded to her. I said, "You ain't seen nothing yet, you know?" So, you know, my first question is like, why all of a sudden this woman from Australia, 4 months later, responds to an email that I sent 4 months ago, the day after I had this contact, you know? Now I know that wasn't a coincidence.
That's right. That's E.T. said, give him a yell.
Okay, that wasn't a coincidence. So anyway, I then sent her an email about what happened that day, you know, of me getting that download with physics, you know. And she said, "Ray, let's Skype." And I had never Skyped before. So that was the first time I ever did a Skype call. And then in that conversation, she told me that she was a dear friend with an emeritus and a retired professor from astrophysics at Harvard University, Dr. Rudy Shields. And I never heard of this person before. And so we talked about, you know, what she had learned about physics and Dr. Rudy Shields, about, you know, how he looks at the world, that he's very, very much interested in what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. So we hung up on a call and we agreed to discuss later on in the future. So anyway, the next day at 9:30 in the morning, I get a phone call. "Hello? Hello, is this Ray Hernandez?" I said, "Yes." I said, "Oh, this is Dr. Rudy Shields." And I go, "Who?" You know, I totally forgotten this guy's name, you know. "Oh, excuse me, I'm Mary's friend, Dr. Rudy Shields, a professor of astrophysics at Harvard." And I was like, holy you know, this guy's calling me at 9:30 in the morning at my house, you know. So anyway, for the next 90 minutes, this guy's spoon-feeding like a little baby quantum physics and explaining to me how quantum physics explains or can explain all of the paranormal phenomena that people are seeing, okay. And he's like, you know, giving me all this stuff, and I'm like, you know, I was familiar with some of it because I had written read a lot of these books on consciousness studies, and a lot of it from the physicist portion of it dealt with quantum physics, specifically this theory called the quantum hologram theory. So anyway, for 90 minutes, he kept on going. Then this is what he told me, Joe. He said, "Ray, whatever you do in the future, either a documentary or get this, or whether you want to form an organization, okay, that's key." He says, "I'm here to back you up. I will be your science advisor for whatever you do." And he said, "And by the way, I'm dear friends with Dr. Edgar Mitchell." Okay. And he says, "You're familiar with Edgar Mitchell?" And of course I knew about him. He's the father of modern consciousness studies. Okay. I've read tons of it, of almost all of the books that were published by the Institute of Noetic Sciences. And, you know, people always think of Edgar as the sixth man on the moon. But no, he has a PhD in physics from MIT. Mm-hmm. He was also basically one of the founders of modern studies in telepathy. You know, outside of the studies that were done in Duke University, he was one of the people that worked at the Stanford Research Institute with Russell Clark doing all these telepathy studies. And then he's the founder of the Institute of Noetic Studies to study basically consciousness from a scientific perspective. And so he gave me his telephone number, and he says, "Give him a call. I'm going to give him a call and send him an email. You need to talk to him." And I was like, holy, you know, you know, I can't talk to Edgar Mitchell. You know, this guy's like, you know, he's way up there, you know. And here I am, you know, I'm going to feel embarrassed talking to this guy, you know. So anyway, I worked up the nerve later on in the afternoon. I gave him a call. When I called him up, he said, "Oh, hi." And this is the first thing he says, "I was expecting your phone call." Okay? Now, how does someone all of a sudden says I was expecting your phone call? You know, I get the impression that he's like, you know, telepathic or something like that. So he goes, I was expecting your phone call. And he goes, I just finished speaking with Rudy. And he had sent me an email early in the morning. He says, you're someone that I need to take seriously. And we spoke a little bit about what had happened to me. Then he invited me to his house. Okay. A couple of days later, I went to his house, and then he went on and told me a lot of his, you know, his stories, personal stories. I won't go into those details, you know, because a lot of them are publicly known. And then he says, as we get to know each other a little bit better, I'm going to give you some, you know, details that not too many people know, you know, but not now. And then he started talking about quantum physics, the work that he's doing. And then again, he tells me, he says, Ray, if whatever you're going to be doing in the future, Rudy and I are going to be there to support you as scientific advisors, whether you do a documentary or whether you form an organization, we're going to be there because the message is very important to relate to the public, you know, that physics explains not only the paranormal phenomena, but it explains the way UFOs operate. And so I was like, wow. You know, so all of a sudden I sent an email to our dear friend that we know both know. I sent an email to Mary Rodwell and I said, we need to talk, you know, let's do a Skype. And Mary had taught me how to use it. So that same night we got on Skype and I said, look, you know, these two people basically, you know, volunteered to do whatever we wanted to do, you know, and both of them told me to form an organization. I said, let's form an organization. Okay. And then initially, for the first couple of weeks, it was to do that documentary. Okay. And then, like a couple of days later, Mary came up with the name, FREE, F-R-E-E, Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters. Within a week.
By the way.
Excuse me?
I said I like the name, by the way. Go ahead.
Hell yeah. It was Mary. You know Mary's gift.
Oh, Mary's,
you know, quote,
unquote. I have done, I think to date, like 21 or 22 interviews with Mary, and we've worked some joint projects. A friend of hers and one of her contactees, Suzanne Hansen, who's out of New Zealand, we've done a lot of research. Plus, I just like the way they do things. We don't always agree, mind you, but I do like the way they do things. They're, you know,
Mary is such a lovely person, Joe.
Oh, yeah, she's
a
great
person. I mean,
she's
pure love, you know, pure love. And a wonderful person.
Oh, she is. She's a joy to talk to. She does good, solid research.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, I always enjoy talking to her. And I do. I try to talk to her at least once or twice a year. It's good for me, in all fairness, because we're both doing the same kind of research. It just, we get to banter back and forth for a couple of hours. Just, and basically what we're doing is just going over the research we've been doing. It's really great for the audience and the content.
So here we are, Joe, right? We got the green light, okay? Within a week, we had not only Dr. Edgar Mitchell, not only Dr. Rudy Shields, you know, a retired professor of astrophysics, okay? We had all these very, very famous names. Let me reel off some of the names that we have now in FREE, okay? We have Dr. Leo Sprinkle, who is the first academic to do research on abduction. In 1961 was the first research that he did on abductees, okay? We also have Whitley Strieber. Okay, we have Kathleen Martin, who's MUFON's director of abduction research. Mm-hmm. We have Denise Stoner, who co-authored a book with Kathleen titled Alien Abduction Files. Okay, we have Dr. John Klimo, who's a professor of psychology, teaching for 40 years, who's the leading academic on the paranormal. He has chaired over 250 PhD dissertations. 75 of those PhD dissertations have been on the paranormal. Okay, we have Linda Moulton Howe. Okay, we have Ralph Steiner, who's for 30 years been investigating the paranormal, and he's also a quantum physicist, self-trained at the level of a postdoc in quantum physics and mathematics. I could go on and on and on. All the individuals associated with FREE, it's that type of caliber level of individuals. And I apologize if I'm omitting people, but I could go on for the next
five. It's a good group.
Yeah, yeah. And all these people, Joe, were basically put on my lap. You know, I didn't reach out to them. It's like they came to me. It's like they were guided to me.
In all fairness, when it comes to ufologists, it's a little different than that, but you're kind of new to it, so I'll let you find out for yourself.
Okay. But I'm just telling you the facts. You know, I didn't make phone calls to these people.
No.
They were all placed on me.
It's what we were talking about at the break. If
yeah.
The way this works is it'll usually you'll get what you need plus. So you got to be kind of careful sometimes because I learned that
yeah.
plus is not always a good. Sometimes it's a good thing. Sometimes it's a bad thing. And that and I did find out. You know, we like to keep a certain amount of diversity. But I've also found out that if everybody's always arguing, nothing ever gets done. So there's a fine. Of course, I've run three different businesses, including this radio
yeah.
station. So I've learned over the years how to deal with personalities. One thing about contactees is they do have we'll just say outstanding, outgoing personalities. Some of them are okay. withdrawn in the beginning.
Well, we touched about that a little bit off the record.
Yeah.
But basically, we do have differences of opinion in our organization, and I welcome that because I'm a newbie. I've only had communications with other contactees for only a year. Okay,
yeah.
my perspective to all of this, Joe, is quite frank. Nobody knows nothing about what's going on. That's my approach. Even though there have been. Yeah, my approach, exactly.
Yeah.
Basically, what I tell all these people that have worked with us, I said, look, you know, you're going to have to put, you know, your history, your prior knowledge at the door. Let's address this now with a clean slate because this thing is so complicated, as you know. You know, nobody knows the answers, let alone what
nobody
are the questions.
Will either.
Yeah,
It's too big. It's too big. Even at the rate we're growing, it's too big. It's if you took us and all the rest of the researchers out there combined, we might have, and I'm going to stress this as a very big might, maybe 15% of what's going on. Maybe.
Yeah. It's an extremely complicated phenomenon.
Yeah, and I want to stress this again. That's a highly exaggerated number, that 15%. I don't personally think it's that high, but because I have fellow researchers that listen to the show, I don't want to you know, be mean to anybody,
okay.
So we're going to say 15%.
My whole approach, Joe, as a newbie, is that this thing is so complicated, no one has the answers, let alone what would be the proper questions to even ask, you know? But let me go into some of the things that are happening, okay? How Free has developed. Basically, Free has three different objectives, okay? Overall, Free is an organization that has been established by contactees for contactees. Now, let me get into some definitions, okay? We are not an abduction group, okay? We are focusing on contact, okay? There are many, many individuals that consciously have no information about being abducted, whether, you know, what the research shows or not, you know, the vast majority of people with our group have had contact. Out of the 20 members in our advisory board, everyone except one individual has had contact with non-human intelligent entities. So our definition of contact is not strictly in the abduction phenomenon. We have Marilyn Hughes, which is part of our group, and she's the founder of the Out of Body Travel Foundation. We also have another individual that has had ET contact through mystical travel. For example, both of them, when they first started doing meditation, immediately they went out of their body. Okay. Shortly after afterwards, like a week or two later of experiences, they went straight into the astral realms, you know, the matrix, the spirit world, the different multi-dimensional realities.
I got a question for you right here. This is
Joe.
Thing. First off, we have what they call non-physical abductions. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not.
Yes.
We also know that they do direct downloads to, I should say, uploads to the craft where you're out of your body, but you're actually there, wherever there happens to be at the time.
Yes.
My question has always been to people who tell me they have out-of-body experiences, how do you know the difference? Because really you're not. I mean, it is the matrix in your head, so there's no way for you to actually know the difference. So I often think when people are having out-of-body experiences, that's not what actually is going on. And I would bet $10,000 if I regressed them, that's not what was going on. See, this is an important thing, and I stress this to people all the time. Surface memories are just that.
their surface memories. A lot of times in this field, you have to go much, much below the top memories, because usually the top memories are cover memories. For whatever experiences you just had or whatever you were involved with, that's what they're there for. They're to make your little mind and your little life go easier. But that's not always what's really actually going on.
Yeah.
We have found out many, 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 unfortunately, too many times. It's a scary thing, but that's something you'll learn as you go. I'm not trying to give you a hard time, by the way.
My whole point, Joe, is that we the way we're looking at contact is not like a lot of organizations, which is purely looking at abduction. No. We're looking at the pure contact phenomenon, where people have had actually interactions with non-human intelligent beings for many different mechanisms and ways. So that's one differentiation. Now, when we were starting to form this organization, one thing that I looked at was that from my own experience, I can only go from my own experience, Joe, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you go to the Internet, all of this is total confusion, you know? Most of it is BS, you know? And all it does is confuse you even more, okay? What I had learned from my experiences of reading all these books, especially the consciousness studies books, and then after interacting with Edgar and Rudy, all they did was just reinforce it, mm-hmm. is that there is indeed physics behind this phenomenon. Okay, so what we're doing with our website is we have two science-oriented topic areas. One is the science and physics of ET contact. And we have Dr. Rudy Shields. He's already written one article. He's going to be writing a total of four articles for our website. And some of them articles are, you know, very easy to read. Some of them are medium, and some are a little bit more advanced for the physicists.
Well, Edgar, I can help you jumpstart there, because I did some interviews with Michio Kaku on contact, the support of life, and a couple other physics things, how we will achieve fast and light travel, how will we get in space, stuff like that. But we did one show just on the existence of extraterrestrials. It's a very interesting show. I also did one with mm-hmm. Neil deGrasse Tyson and Dr. Pallava, whose quantum mechanics theory. I love physics. It's one of my favorite.
Okay. You're going to love our website, because we have, as authors, if you could, familiar with some of these names, mm-hmm. Sir Roger Penrose mm-hmm. from Cambridge University. We have Stuart Homaroff, who's the founder and the director of the Institute of Consciousness Studies, who's a medical doctor out of the University of Arizona. We have Rupert Sheldrake, who's a professor, I believe at Oxford, a biologist. Either Oxford or Cambridge, I forgot. But he's one of the pioneers of biological consciousness studies. Edgar wrote numerous articles for us. We also have Claude Swanson that allowed us to republish one of his lengthier articles. Mm-hmm. We have numerous articles on the physics of what we're doing. And the focus that different from Michio Kaku and from Neil deGrasse is...
They all have different opinions, by the way. All three of them guys have different opinions on this.
Okay. Focus that we're taking, Joe, is something quite unique, okay? Mm-hmm. We're looking at quantum hologram theory, and which specifically has an offshoot of consciousness studies.
So y'all
those other individuals don't have that.
So that means you're working off of Dr. Paul of a Let's Work. That's one of the things he specialized.
Well, actually,
one of the things that he introduced to the field when he introduced the cosmic pulse theory.
I don't want to get into those specifics, but basically there are various offshoots of the quantum hologram theory. Mm-hmm. Dr. Edgar Mitchell, as a matter of fact, was one of the early pioneers in that, which a lot of people don't know. Rudy Shields, to get a little background on Rudy Shields, okay, 30 years ago, Hawkins, the physicist and mathematician from Cambridge, became very, very famous, Stephen Hawkins. He wrote a book on black holes, okay? All of a sudden, he became known as the smartest man in the world, okay? Approximately 20 years ago, Rudy Shields wrote a series of articles saying that Hawkins was wrong, okay? He was basically ignored for all those 20 years. Why? Because Hawkins was Hawkins. He had that name. And everyone's like, oh, who's this guy?
Everybody always thought Hawkins was part of the Dolphin Society anyway, so.
Well, what had happened was Hawkins, about 5 months ago, came out publicly. It was in all the media. He publicly admitted that for the last 30 years he was wrong on black holes, that in actuality black holes don't exist. Okay? Exactly what Rudy Shields said 20 years ago. So I don't know if you follow boxing, but if you knock out the heavyweight champion, okay, who's the champion now?
Okay? Yeah, the person that knocked them out. Black holes don't exist. Nobody's champion. We know black holes exist. Hell, we got one massive in the middle of our damn galaxy.
Well, they're actually something very different. It's not what Hawkins had referred to as a black hole.
But
it operates
it's
totally
Einstein
different from what Hawkins has said.
Yeah, but it's what Einstein referred to as a black hole. I would bet you Einstein is right on the money when it comes to black holes, just like he has been on most of his work. Not all of it, mind you, but most of it.
No, I won't go into those.
You know,
it's
funny about that, too. Something that you might interest you is Einstein actually allows for fast and light travel. Most people don't realize that. When you go back to EM equals squared, they just don't really realize it. But when you actually go back and read to his work, and the easy book, the best book for laymen to read is A Universe in a Nutshell. It'll actually walk you through that.
Well, Joe, let me say something that's going to rock your world, okay? We have a contactee, okay, a contactee that is going to be writing an article just specifically on what you talked about.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's
in terms of time and travel faster than the speed of light. And Edgar and Rudy are working with them. Okay. So our website has this component that's focusing on consciousness from a scientific point of view and the physics of contact. Now the rest of the other areas. More of the normal stuff that you see in a lot of these websites. But again, the orientation of our group is oriented to the science of the ET contact phenomenon. But we are going to have, you know, Mary's articles on star children. We're going to have, the hybrid debate, good alien versus bad alien, their mission, you know, all those types of articles.
Y'all are going to have the same problem MUFON does, though, in getting contactees. The reason ICAR is a privately funded, privately run organization is because under the government, any 501(c), you have to make it public who your members are, who makes donations, who has money, and anybody involved. And most contactees just don't feel comfortable with that. It's one of the reasons why so many of MUFON's contactees come to us. It's why. They don't feel comfortable with that. It's one of the reasons because in the beginning we were a 501(c). As soon as I change it from 501(c) to a protected organization where if you want to know who my membership is, you're going to have to drag me into court to find out. And at that time, I'm going to make it public to everybody that the government's dragging me in court to find out
well,
who my contact is.
Well, Joe, my reading of the statutes is totally different, okay?
Well, no, that's
we
the
can
law.
Have We can have members subscribe to our organization, and we have no need to describe the members, only for the funding of it. And right now, we're very limited funding.
Okay, no, that's not true. The way it works is anything from donations and all, you have to make public to everyone.
Yeah.
Any membership, though, the government, when they come in to do an audit, has the right to audit. So the government does get to see.
You're talking to a lawyer, Joe, and I know you know your facts as well, but it all defines how membership is there. We can have people to give their websites. That doesn't necessarily mean their membership. We're not going to have memberships.
But see, then you're safe.
But anyway, let me transition, Joe, because I don't want to get bogged down on that.
No, go. We got plenty of time.
So one point that we're doing is the actual education component, okay? And again, it's going to be education about the contactee phenomenon based on science. And not too many, you know, outlets are out there, you know, pushing that line with all the – we have four individuals that are advanced physicists as part of our organization. We also have a research geneticist. We have two medical doctors, okay? So now the next component of it is we're going to have a component that's support and therapy. We have in our group, we have three individuals that have PhDs in psychology. All of them are contactees. We have eight additional individuals that are licensed mental health therapists as volunteers for free. What we're going to have is we already have 25 individuals that have agreed to be buddies. That means individuals that have agreed to talk to contactees, to call them up, to interact with them via email. because the first thing that I needed, Joe, as you know, when you have these experiences, you want someone to talk to. Because you can't talk to your family, you can't talk to your friends. You know, who in the hell do you talk to, you know?
That's the whole point. You got to have somebody to talk to. And,
someone to talk to.
If you find the right person to talk to, they will usually help you to get to the rest of the people you need to talk to. It works pretty well, really, most of the time.
So we're going to have this buddy system. All the individuals that we have selected to be buddies are all contactees for at least 20 years, okay? Individuals that have been there, done that. The older crowd, you know, we don't want any, you know, teenagers, you know, involved in this thing here. You know, people that are going to be working with
teens
you.
Teens are rarely contactees. Teens are rarely contactees. Usually people who fall in a contactee group are usually 35 or over. And for the main reason is that that's about the age you can really start to understand or deal with what's been going on. And everybody reacts to it differently, but it's interesting.
So we've got the buddy system. We're also going to have a chat room, an interactive chat room as part of our site, where the contactees can talk among themselves. You know, someone from Mexico and Russia might have had the same exact experience, and they'll be able to chat and talk about it. We're also going to have the ability for individuals, for contactees, to leave their audio and video. Now, here's where we might have a difference here, Joe. My philosophy of it all, like we discussed over the break, we both know that this phenomenon is much, much larger than the public knows. Misquoted that there are billions of people in the world.
Lord. If you ever get bored one day, Ray,
You're never going to lose that, Joe. The issue, Joe, is that you and I both know that no one has any idea how large this phenomenon is. My perspective is just like the gay movement, okay? They came out of the closet little by little, and now it's like passé, you know? It's totally accepted. All these laws are passed. It's like a non-issue, okay? My approach is I want to be able to have the ability for individuals that feel assured, that feel comfortable, like myself, and coming out of the closet, you know, I'm a contactee. This is my experience. For them to be able to leave either an audio or a video of their experiences on their website, okay? There will be also another option of them leaving a 500-word summary of their experiences. And then with that information, for the people that do decide to leave their email link, other individuals in the chat room can then, you know, hit them up and say, look, I want to talk to you about your experience, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So what that does is provides another form of outlet of interaction, of support and communication and therapy. And then if someone really has difficulties, then we have these licensed therapists. We're not going to specifically refer them to specific individuals. But if someone says, okay, this one's having all this problem, you know, then the licensed therapist might talk to them, not in a professional capacity, but just to give them some guidance and some feedback. We're also going to have on our website a list of licensed therapists that have a history of working with contactees. Okay, we're also going to have a list of support groups all throughout the world, if we can, but at least focusing on the United States for the very beginning. We're not going to be recommending specific individuals, specific organizations. No, we're just going to have the list, and it will be responsibility of the contactee to give them a call. We're also going to be having a list of regression therapists, if someone wants to do that, have worked with contactees in the past. And again, we're not going to, you know, push them to specific individuals, but just have the broad list out there. So in a nutshell, that is the support and the therapy component of free. Okay. The third component is a project that I'm very much interested in. And let me give you a little background information. I already told you a little bit about Dr. John Klimo, who, in my opinion, is the world's leading academic on the paranormal. And I told you a little bit about his previous background, where he has chaired all these PhD dissertations, and 75 of them have been on the topic of the paranormal. And many of them have dealt with the contactee and the abduction phenomenon. And he's written many articles on this phenomenon as well from an academic point of view. Many months ago, I approached Dr. Klimo, and I said, John, I've been doing, you know, given my academic background, when I had all these experiences, what I started to do was an academic review of what has been put out there. And I said, John, there's hardly no academic literature at all on the contact or abduction phenomena. You know, there's obviously works by Dr. Leo Sprinkles, Dr. Kenneth Ring, and various other individuals, but basically you could count them on your hand, the type of academic studies that are out there. We do have, you know, the works of John Mack, but that was a very small group, small sample. It was, I think, it was less than 50 individuals. Mary Rodwell has done her work, Barbara Lamb.
You know, we still work with 26 of John Mack's original group.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so I approached John, and I said, John, I said, we have on our board literally a who's who of people that have done abduction research. Let me make a proposal to you, okay? Why don't we try to establish an academically oriented, peer-reviewed, that means that other academics can review how we did our methodology, our study, you know, the whole full process out in the open, long-term academic study on the contactee phenomenon. Not necessarily the abduction phenomenon, mm-hmm. but just the overall contact phenomenon. And he was like, Ray, I was born for this, you know, and he's just retiring, so he's going to have plenty of time for this. And so he agreed to it. And then we established a subcommittee, a committee called the Research Committee. And Dr. Klimo is the chair of that committee. And the other members of that group are Barbara Lamb, which you know very well. You know, she's in her early 80s. Yeah. She's been doing this for 40 years at least.
Oh, yeah.
Mary Rodwell, who you've had on your show, you know, numerous occasions. Mary's been doing this, you know, forever as well. We also have Kathleen. Kathleen's MUFON's director of abduction research. Denise Stoner, who you know as well, has been doing this for 30 years, abduction research. We have Ralph Steiner from California, who's been dealing with paranormal issues. Investigations. He actually was a science producer for KPFA, a public radio station in California. We also have Dr. Leo Sprinkle, who I said earlier was basically the father of abduction studies.
Leo's early work is phenomenal. Not so happy with his later stuff, but his early work is just really, really, really good. I worked with several of his contactees as well, by the way.
Yeah.
Actually, there's pretty much anybody you mentioned I've either working with or still working with their contactees.
Yeah, yeah.
You'd be surprised how many of
And then we also have this fellow from Latin America who you probably have not heard of. His name is Giorgio Piacenza. Super, super smart person. He's one of the top ufologists in Latin America. He's well-known all throughout Latin America. He's from Peru. Extremely bright person, and he's been working in the contactee and the UFO phenomenon for about 30 years. And his specialty is exopolitics. And he's on the board of advisors for Michael Salas Group.
On Michael Salas' advisory board as well.
Okay. So, you know, Salas probably knows him. He's very, very well known. So that is basically our group, which is, as you know, is like a who's who. Mm-hmm. And so what we did is we actually borrowed some of your questionnaires, the initial questionnaires that you have.
Which is fine.
Yeah, we borrowed Mary's questionnaires, Barbara's questionnaires, David Jacobs' questionnaires, MUFON's questionnaires. We borrowed Leo's questionnaires. And we basically made one questionnaire, which is quantitative in nature, basically, you know, yes or no, which is basically like a lot of people use, was just to identify who might be a contactee.
Yeah.
Okay. And again, the focus is not strictly on abduction. It's about contact overall, which, as you know, obviously includes abduction. Okay. And then what we're in the process of starting to work now is on these secondary questionnaires. Okay. And that's where this group is going to be earning their money. Okay. We have established 14 categories of possible secondary questions.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was how you know, called me, which is on the issue of my lab, you know,
mm-hmm.
Because we were trying to get a feedback from Melinda Leslie and Niara
Isley.
Oh, goodness, sir.
Isley. Isley, yeah.
in terms of assisting with my lab questionnaire. Yeah. So basically, we're developing these topic areas. For example, one example would be individuals that have had science and physics downloads, which you know is quite, you know, it's
you
not
know,
rare, but it's
out there. Well, to help you out, Ray, there's a Coast to Coast Melinda and I did just on MILabs. They had asked me if I'd come on because I had just done a bunch of MILab stuff at the time. And Melinda's a really good friend of mine. Matter of fact, she's the one that got me involved with the damn MILabs. And she had asked me to do a study inside the organization to see how many we actually had. And then we did a real big study on them. And then I got with her, and then we got on Coast, and we talked about it. But there's a lot of good stuff that came out on that episode y'all could probably use on a question.
Well, what you could do, Joe, is I know you're an extremely busy individual. But maybe we could set some time out later on once we have these secondary questionnaires, at least the topic headings and with the sub-questions. Because we figured out internally that this is going to take several months, you know, four to five months.
This is my rule, by the way, Ray. If you estimate something time-wise, double it.
Because it'll be longer.
Just double it, man. Just be yourself.
Everyone knows that the bread and butter of this study is in these secondary questionnaires.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, basically we're going to be having numerous of these secondary questionnaires. We are going to be tossing back and forth, debating the questions, adding, subtracting, all of this stuff. So everyone has reached a consensus. It took a while even to reach a consensus on the preliminary questionnaire, which initially, you know, a lot of people took for granted, and I took for granted. But after we started dissecting these questions, you know, we had questions that we were asking double questions, you know, within one question, you know, the phrasing, we weren't phrasing it properly. And but at the end, everyone was extremely satisfied with this initial questionnaire. So then we have already in place about 8 individuals, all of them contactees, okay, to administer these questionnaires. And John and our large group is going to be tutoring them, giving them guidance and classes in terms of administering these secondary questionnaires. These secondary questionnaires are going to be quantitative, which is, you know, from 1 to 10, yes or no, you know, type of questions. And there'll be qualitative. Those are open-ended type of questions, okay? We also have 2 individuals that are database experts. Okay, they're going to be formatting a database for us to be able to input all the information, where if someone is typing out these qualitative responses, you know, these open-ended questions, we are going to be looking for certain keywords, okay? And then those keywords are going to be automatically tabulated in a statistical manner in these open-ended questions. So even for the open-ended questions, we're going to be getting statistical tabulations for various keywords.
Hey, Jeffrey, I agree.
So it's going to be a very, very sophisticated approach to how we're doing this. Eventually, all of our data is going to be peer-reviewed. It's going to be open to anyone. We're going to be having an open-source library where it's going to be, you know, on the Internet after we publish and put the things out publicly. It'll be out in the open for everyone, for other individuals, in case they want to do further research of it. So that, pretty much in a nutshell, is the second phase. I'm sorry, Joe?
Well, no, one of our directors just wrote in, and they can tell you spent quite a bit of time with our mutual friend. I'm not going to say her name, but yes, I can hear it, too. I hear it. It's funny, when I originally start working with our different directors in the organization on what I expect out of them as far as research goes and how they handle contactees, it's always pleasant for me when I talk to one of the people they've worked with or talked to hear so much. That's what she wrote in to tell me about, is you can literally hear half of what she would be telling me in your voice when you were talking, or terms or things that she would use normally that they use inside the organization, which it just makes me feel good to know she's doing her job.
We're still dear friends, and
we're praying
that this issue gets resolved.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And that type of thought, Joe, was not just with her, Joe.
Oh,
it was
know,
with other members of
oh,
our
no,
committee
no,
as
no.
well.
Oh no, no,
it was
I know
mutual,
that.
You know.
No, that's not what I was saying.
Yeah.
There was just certain words you were saying that I know that we use on a regular basis, and if you're talking to anybody, it's something you would pick up on rather quickly. Matter of fact, you can tell when I do different interviews with different ufologists in the field, if you go listen to them like the week later, the next 2 weeks later, they'll be quoting stuff that I was saying without even actually realizing they're doing it, which is what we want. It works perfectly. It's a form of brainwashing without actually brainwashing is what it is. It's a way to assimilate information.
What it basically is, Joe, it's a scientific approach that we're doing, you know. Dr. Klima, one of the areas that he teaches, he's been teaching it for 40 years, is qualitative research methodology, okay? Right. So when he and I started to discuss, we didn't have any differences of opinion in terms of this methodology that I just laid out. You know, his approach was exactly what I initially had told him, and which is what we're doing. Now the last phase.
You're not going to work if you're not. You got to be strict on the way you're going to handle things and the way you approach information and how.
I mean, if we're going to have other professors opening up and scrutinizing what we're doing, you know, it has to be done right. It has to be a slow process. We have all these brains, all these individuals that have, you know. Each of them has averaged 30 years, you know, at least 30 to 40 years as researchers, you know. So that group is basically working with Dr. Klima because he's the academic, but has not been the full-time, you know, contacting abduction researcher, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a symbiotic process that we're dealing with. Now let me go into the last and final phase, okay. Yes. After we're foreseeing, you know, several years of these in-depth interviews of individuals, we have our database fully loaded. We have our two SAS statistical people doing all these type of statistical analysis and preloading these pre-programs to work off keywords that we have entered into these special profiles, okay? Then the last phase, Joe, is to focus on certain individuals that have unique stories. And what we'd be doing is basically like writing books, you know, individual case studies. But these will be like book-length type of case studies. And then eventually Free will be publishing a book size, book lengthy, lengthy articles, you know, book length articles on individuals. Because these are individuals, as you know, that they're out there that have had such a broad diversity of experiences that we need to be able to highlight those. And again, when no one is going to take credit for this. This is not going to be done just by John Klimo, you know. This is going to be a group process authored by all of these individuals, all under the umbrella of Free. It's not going to be marketed to make money, okay. If there's anything that's going to be made, it's going to be put right back into Free or organizationally. And in a nutshell, those are the three pillars of Free. And again, the website is contactee.org, and I'll spell it. contactee.org. And our website right now is about one-third completed. And by June 15th, it should be fully completed. But it is open right now for people to take a look at. We will be able to have it where people can put their emails. We also have the ability for people to put pseudonames. In case they don't want to leave their names. Free, what we're doing, which I think is quite unique, is the issue of the support and the therapy, which I've articulated before. The key concept here is the buddy system, where we're actually going to be having 25 individuals dedicated to working with many contactees. We have three individuals speak Spanish, fluent in Spanish. We have two individuals that are fluent in French, okay? We are also going to be and then the other component is the educational component. And again, the foundation of the educational component is based on science and physics, okay? I mentioned all of these physicists that are writing articles for Free. There's like 8 physicists altogether. And again, these are the cream of the crop. But the focus is we're going to be having articles that are easy, that, you know, any regular person can read. We're going to be having mid-level articles which are, you know, you and I can tackle that, Joe. And then there's going to be articles which are like for the heavy duty folks, you know, for the people that have a physics background and heavy duty science.
I'm really, really weird. Like, you know, most people like to read a book. I like to read technical journals. I'll actually break out how you work, you know, because I build and design.
Well, you're going to love what we got, Joe, because it's going to be breaking it down at different levels for many different types of mindsets. For the abilities, because, you know, we all come in different shapes and colors here, you know,
including
our ability to understand information.
And, you know, anytime I bring a major physicist on the show, I actually ask them. Well, some of them you don't have to, because some of them already know they got to dumb it down. But every now and then I'll get like a physicist, you know, I got a couple of friends that teach physics at different colleges, and I'll invite them on the show. They forget sometimes they're not talking to a class. They start teaching physics. Whoa, I said, whoa, guys, you're way above what most of the audiences even understand what the hell you're talking about. Let's just slow it down and bring it down. Because it's important for me, because when we introduce different things to our listening audiences and over on other shows, I like people to understand stuff. Like when we do anything, when we're talking about advanced space travel or something, we've had major physicists on here just to discuss it, so it can be put into layman terms on why aliens may be coming, how they may be getting here. Because for half the people, I find for them to get to where you and I are, they have to have some kind of how could it be possible. Well, people like KQ and Tyson and all of them give them the way it can be possible.
I think that Rudy and Edgar and the other folks that we've got top them, because their focus, Joe, is on the topic of consciousness, okay? When their focus is not.
That's a slippery slope, though. Consciousness, I learned something a long time ago.
They're dealing with consciousness, Joe, not from a metaphysical perspective. They're dealing with the topic of consciousness as a derivative of the quantum hologram theory. And we're going to have various articles, some of them very – have you ever heard of this gentleman called Dr. Joe Lewis?
No.
Okay, in 1997, he wrote a book called The God Hypothesis, okay, which, you know, part of this whole process of me ordering tons of these books, right, he had a chapter in there where he wrote about the quantum hologram theory. And that was the only product that I saw, Joe, that explained it in a simple way, this super complex theory. Michael Talbot did that book, The Holographic Universe, Michael Talbot, which I'm sure you're familiar with. And that was basically a book about the quantum hologram theory. And so what Joe did was basically got Michael Talbot's book and condensed it into 15 pages. And so I spoke with Dr. Lewis, and he agreed to have that article published on free. And he's a journalist. He was a professor of journalism for many, many years. So the article is written like you're reading a newspaper, okay? But yet it explains a concept that is so heavy duty that very few people really understand it. And so we have that article. I gave it to – I personally went up to Edgar's house. He lives in Lake Worth, Florida. I went to his house with some other business, but I gave him that article. And I said, Edgar, I found the article that I've been looking for about the quantum hologram theory. Explains it very simplistically. Can you please take a look at it? And I told him that Rudy Shields already took a look at it, and he approved it. He said, it's excellent. So Edgar took his time. He read it. And afterwards, you know, Edgar doesn't say a lot, you know. He just says, it's good. Go with it.
He's such a strange guy. I've had dinner with him twice. The very first time
What I'm talking about, Joe, right?
You know, it's funny, though, because the very first time I ever met him, I met him, Buzz Aldrin, and Neil Armstrong all at the same time, and I was working press, but it had nothing to do with UFOs, by the way. This was about 26 years ago. And I was down there doing something for some friends of mine who owned some local TV station, and I said, okay, I'll go down and do this for you. And I was down there, and they were all really – the guys were really nice. They were a lot of fun. I actually went out to dinner with them. They were kind of crazy. It's just like what you would see on The Right Stuff, but – Edgar with them is open, but when you get Edgar away from them, and with like when I had dinner with him and Stephen Bissett at the press club, he's much more refrained. But he's still, if you ask him a question, he's very knowledgeable, and he doesn't mind answering a question. He just wants you to ask a pointed question if you're going to ask it to him. He doesn't.
Yes,
I imagine
yes.
He gets a lot of BS questions. He loved me because
you know what Rudy Shields told me, Joe. Rudy Shields said Edgar got overtraining in the NASA missions, where you're supposed to be very brief with your responses. He said Edgar got a double dose of that training.
I bet you did.
Because all of his responses are like, you know, three words, you know, that's it, you know.
Yeah, Stephen Bissett told him, he said, look, I'm going to sit you here by Joe. He'll keep you talking all afternoon, man. He put me, it was a great evening. We had a great time. He's a really nice guy.
No, Edgar has been, you know, fantastic. I've been up to his house 5 different times.
Yeah, he's great.
We're working on several projects outside of Flea as well. And he read that article right there and he said, go for it, right, you know. So what we're trying to do, Joe, excuse me?
No, go ahead. I was talking to myself. Go ahead. That just slipped out. Go on, man. It was nothing important.
Okay. So basically, Joe, one thing that separates from a lot that's out there is that, you know, we're talking about this phenomenon with the top, you know, physics geniuses, you know, Sir Roger Penrose. He's got a sir for a reason, you know, you know, because Stephen Hawking is a sir, you know, he's at that level. He wrote an article for Rudy's Journal, the Journal of Cosmology, okay, with this individual who is a medical doctor, started the Institute of Consciousness Studies at the University of Arizona, goodness, I think like 20 or 25 years ago. So they jointly wrote an article about the quantum hologram theory, and then the neuroscientist wrote about the brain. So he was writing about the quantum hologram theory from the perspective of the brain and microtubules in our brain, which basically serve as sort of like computer processors that process non-material consciousness information, what some people might refer to as zero-point energy, you know, zero-point field. So anyway, both of them wrote a very, very complicated article, and Edgar wrote a very, very complicated article in Rudy's Journal of Cosmology. Rudy said, look, Ray, we've got like, you know, 30 articles here. The ones that I recommend are the best of these two. And I said, well, can I publish them? He says, of course you can. And then he said, it's very important because there's going to be a lot of individuals that have a physics background that might not appeal to, you know, your website. But if it has these types of articles, then they might say, okay, you know, these people are dealing with hardcore science, you know, that is not just a bunch of new age quacks, you know. And so that's sort of the approach that we want to take. But on the other hand, Joe, we do have a diversity of people in our group. We have individuals that consider themselves hybrids, you know, star people. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, people that are mystical meditators in our group. Because as you know, as we talked about earlier, this is such a complex phenomenon, you can't exclude everyone. It's all part of the same umbrella.
You can't, but you can. Because it is very, it's got a lot going on. But to be honest with you, it's a much tighter group than most people want to admit to. Because, you know, you don't like to cut anybody off. But really and truly, when you get above about 5,000 cases, you're going to notice something right off the bat. That this group is a much tighter group than you originally realized it was. Mm-hmm. These people have a lot of similarities in a lot of different ways. And I'm not just talking about blood. I'm talking about personalities and a lot of other things. You'll find that right off the bat, we don't even consider you a contactee if you're not empathic. We won't even talk to you, all right, because if you're not empathic, you're not a contactee. You might be a lot of other things, but you're not a contactee. It's a given gift right off the bat from them. It's one of the reasons contactees sometimes get a little scatterbrained, a little flaky, because sometimes they'll be sitting somewhere and they'll get sad or happy.
Can I tell you a story about that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me tell you a story about that.
About 15 minutes, so go ahead.
Okay. This is now in November of 2013. We already had our first initial free advisory board meeting back in September, okay? And we were just, you know, working on the logistical stuff for free of what the hell we're going to do, you know, our mission statements, things of that sort, okay? All of a sudden, on a Sunday, it wasn't a message like someone is talking to me or like a message inside my head. It wasn't like that. Everyone has their own particular names, but I call them an intuitive itch, you know? Whereas, like, all of a sudden, I got to, you know, scratch my whole body. But in my case, it's like I got to do what I feel like I got to do, okay? I got to do it, okay? That was, I needed to drive 12 hours to go see Chris Bledsoe, another, you know, well-known contactee, okay? I only had one email exchange with Chris Bledsoe, which was back in June of 2013, because Grant Cameron had just stopped by and had seen Chris. And Chris had told them that he was healed, completely healed, of Crohn's disease, which is, as you know, a debilitating disease. He said that Chris had been in bed basically for 2 years suffering from this disease. He even had sold a lucrative construction business because he just couldn't get out of bed. He even was disabled, okay? And so Grant heard the story of my wife and I where we told him about our dog was being completely healed. So afterwards he says, Ray, you know, I've just been to Chris Bledsoe's house and this is his story. And so he gave me his email. He says, why don't you touch base with him, you know? So I touched base with Chris. That was sometime in early June. It was right after that UFO conference in Sebring, which was in late May of 2013. So that's the only contact I had with Chris, okay? All of a sudden, like 5 months later, on a Sunday, I got this crazy thing like, I got to go see this guy. Not give him a call, not send him an email. I got to see him in person, okay? By Sunday morning, I couldn't stand it. It was like I had like a poison ivy all over my body. You know, I got to go see him. 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 And I told my wife, I got to go see this guy. She goes, well, you know, where does he live? I said, North Carolina. She says, North Carolina? What the hell are you going up there? And I go, I don't know why. She goes, what do you mean you don't know why? I said, I don't know why. Well, you know, how much is the drive up there? I said, well, it's 12-hour drive. She says, you're, you know what, you know? But yet she understood me, Joe, because she herself is a contactee. You know, and she's got through lots of these crazy adventures, you know. So she didn't put up too much of a fight, okay. All of a sudden, Monday night, I give Chris a call. I said, hey, Chris, remember me? He goes, oh, yeah, that's from Miami, you know, with the dog. I said, yeah. So, we had a small talk conversation. And all of a sudden, I go to him and I say, Chris, I need to see you. He goes, well, what do you need to see me for? I said, Chris, I don't know why. Okay, now here's the key part here of what you mentioned earlier, Joe, about, you know, contactees. Chris didn't bother to follow up. He knew that when I told him I needed to see him, he didn't bother me. He knew it was part of this phenomenon, you know. Okay, and so he says, all right, buddy, come up here, you know, but I don't got space here, you know, because I got a big family. So I said, don't worry about it, you know, I'll rent a little cheap place. And so by Wednesday morning, I was already up traveling to North Carolina. I got there late, you know, and so I got into the hotel and stuff, and I gave Chris a call. I said, oh, Chris, you know, it's kind of late, you know, so let's book up tomorrow morning. And so eventually after I spoke with Chris, I won't give you the details because this is, you know, personal, confidential information. But basically Chris validated why I needed to see him, okay? And it sounds crazy, you know, a lot of people that are out there listening, but I got this thing where if I didn't see him, I was going to go, you know, crazy. It was like you get poison ivy all over your body. And once I got up there, he and his wife told me all this information, which validated exactly what I needed to know. You know, and that gets back to this thing of intuition that you talked about, Joe, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's a very strange phenomenon, it really is. But,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I've seen a room, a question go by, or actually a comment go by in a room a few minutes ago, is about all empaths are all empaths contactees. You know, for me, and this is for me, by the way, before anybody starts writing to me, I have never met an empath that wasn't a contactee. Now, a good friend of mine one time was arguing with me about it. She's very into empathic. I said, okay, that's fine. She's, but I'm not an abductee. I said, fine, whatever you want to think. Because I got to be honest, I got a firm rule, and this is a firm rule for ICAR. We don't want to wake anybody up that's not supposed to be awake, all right? Because really, if you're not ready for it, this is going to be a nightmare in your life. This isn't going to be something easy. You have to be ready for this, because if your life is a wreck and all kind of chaos, this is just going to make it worse. It's not going to make it better initially. So you've got to really be ready for this, to go into the awakening from the get-go. It's because we tell people all the time, it's one of the first questions I ask people when they ask me if I will regress them. I said, are you sure you're ready to go down this line? Because I want, because, you know, I'll even kind of give them a little warning, you know, what, you know, it's, you know, look, you know, some other stuff could come out, and it's not peace, love,
in my case, Joe, I wasn't ready for it because I was totally unexpecting it.
Well, yeah.
But what they did is they gave me a crash course in 4 months.
that's not unusual. If the awakening is a very strange thing, and the awakening is just a start, by the way. It's just what gets you cranked up. what this will do is it will allow this part of you to, it'll basically start to consume. You got to be real careful here, by the way. It'll start to consume your life, take over your life. Somewhere along the line, and this, you're not there yet, by the way, but somewhere along the line, you're going to have to stop yourself and say, okay, I've got to put some kind of perspective and balance into this. Because they really, it becomes a very big driving factor in your life. And I got to be honest with you, I'm probably 200-300 G's into this now. And that's not even including the radio station, which I spent 150 G's on when I got it after Katrina. We've dumped a lot of money, a lot of private and personal money into this. And it's – I got to tell you, it's not what everybody thinks it is. But to the person who just wrote that, no, it's not a demon. Get over the demon thing. Demon, if the demon wants you, the demon will come get you. But getting back to the empath thing right quick. In her case, she said, okay – she said, well, I know you do hypnosis – just put me under and let's see if I've ever been contacted. So I said, okay. I put her under. We started at level two, level three, level four. She said, well, I want to go down, you know, pretty deep because I want to make sure. I said, fine. So, you know, we have a step thing that we use for going backwards in time and stuff. It's a very good technique, by the way. It's one of the best I've ever seen. It's top of one of the very best. And all of a sudden, I stopped her on the platform. I got her to stand on the platform. I said, well, look around. I said, now you can see the world, your just images flowing around your head while you're talking to me. And I said, and you just look at them as they go by. When you see one that looks familiar or something that you want to see, just reach out and touch it, and it'll open up, and you'll become part of it. So she opens it up. And by the way, we do voice stress and video when we're doing this. We actually have a voice stress meter running where you can see the voice stress meter. So you can actually see the stress in the individual's voice when this is going on. She just flips out, and I mean, she flipped out hard. And when she come out of it, the whole thing is taped. When she come out of it, she says, "I am going to kill you." I'm like, "What? What?" I said, "I told you in the beginning, I have never met an empath that is not an abductee or a contactee. It is a prerequisite. Anybody who has that strong of an ability is an automatic interest to them, automatic." So it's highly unlikely that they wouldn't have been taking you. And I tell people all the time, 99.95% of all contactees get taken will never know they've been taken. That's the whole point. They only want the ones waking up to talk about this and do work. They don't want everybody waking up. If every contactee woke up, it would be a nightmare, people. Y'all just don't even know, man. Whew, Lord. And frankly, I'm scared to think how many there really are, Ray. I got to be honest with you.
No. Both of us know that it's a very, very large percentage of our population, you know. Joe, can I sort of ask you a question, a personal question?
Yeah, okay. Ask away.
And I want you to be frank, okay? Uh-huh. You're live now, okay? You're frank, okay. Yeah. You heard about these three things now that we're doing. Mm-hmm. Could I take it one by one and get your input and feedback on each one, okay?
Sure.
One is the support and the therapy stuff. We talked about the buddy system where we've got these 25 volunteers. We've talked about all these lists of all the therapists, the regression therapists, the support groups that are out there. And then the more controversial one, but in our case, we're leaving it up to the individual, for individuals to be able to leave video or audios of their experiences, and then the chat room. Okay. All of those components, what do you think about them in general, the whole totality of them?
Well, actually, you'll find that with the support, the chat room will work good. We've actually had an online support group now since 1988. It's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Anybody can come in. And it's a very friendly place. And I'm going to tell you something. We're very strict. We don't let anybody, when a contactee's up there talking about their experience, nobody. If you act like an ass, out you go, bud. You're gone. Mm-hmm. We don't even tolerate any kind of – we do leave it open for anybody wants to. So I think it's a good idea. The buddy system I really like, because you're going to need that to kind of coax – like contactees that are having trouble, like you want to offer support from a more professional standpoint. So you got to kind of coax them into them, because when you mention words like psychologists or stuff like that around contactees, they get very flaky. Because they don't want to end up in a loony bin.
We have sort of incremental steps, Joe, you know?
Yeah. So I think that's going to be good. I don't think it's going to be bad. And if you can implement it, I think it'll be a really, really good addition. Matter of fact, if you implement it correctly, I'll start sending you people. Because there's a real need for support. It's one of the things that myself, Mary Rodwell, Yvonne Smith, pretty much anybody who's anybody, Daryl Sims, anybody who's anybody in the abduction field, we've talked about this many times. There's a need for support not just from us, but from anybody who's involved in this. Now, I know Starborn's offering support now, too, and we've got people in Europe that offer support, and it's getting better. But you know as well as I do, you just don't find support overnight. It takes, you know, it takes time. And
The first thing I was looking out was for someone to talk to. And you were the first person that responded, you know, and you referred me to our mutual friend, you know. Yes. And that was like a lifesaver, you know,
and
I had finally someone to talk to.
Well, I got to be honest, wait, and I shouldn't say this, I mean, it's going to get me in trouble, but I go through cases, I read through the cases, and this is something you're going to start using is keywords. We do keyword searches. Well, while I'm reading what you're writing to me, if I don't hear X amount of keywords, then I kind of move the thing off to the side. I don't dismiss it right away, but I kind of move it off to when I have free time to kind of go back and fiddle around with it. I see X amount of keywords, I will either contact the person and take the case on myself if I have time, or I will send it to one of the directors that are working at the time, doing stuff. So, and that's what happened with you. When I read through it, I said, okay, well, something's going on with this guy. Let me go ahead and refer him. And that way I knew it would get taken care of. Because she's, you know, she's ambitious and she likes to get involved and she likes to talk about this and she likes to work this. And she likes to get in and help contactees. And that's what this is about. I mean, that's the whole reason. Same reason y'all are forming is the whole reason we form, is to help and support contactees. And basically, the research is a plus. All right? The research is a plus. But the fact that there's a place people can talk is what this is about.
The need is there, Joe, as you know.
We never hate on another group. Well, we pick on MUFON a lot because they're kind of goofy sometimes. But other than that, we don't hate on any abduction groups. That's what I should have said. We don't hate on any abduction groups. Anybody who's willing to take this on, we want to help and support it.
Joe, let me ask you the other question in terms of the science approach that we're taking with all these – the physicists and the focusing on consciousness studies, okay?
I think that's a really good thing, by the way.
Yeah.
I would kind of keep it at first a little separate from some of your incoming, like your new people coming into contactees, because it might be a tad bit overwhelming. Because some people want.
Oh, that's only a small component, Joe. That's only like maybe 10%
of
the articles that we have.
Because the more material you can produce and put on there, the more stuff that you can get out there, the more likely somebody is going to either find what they need, or somebody else is going to show something that's being written. Put this in perspective. There's a friend of mine who's a physicist had done an article that we had posted on Facebook, by the way, about something he's working on. I'm not going to mention it because he just got it patented. Lucky bastard. But anyway, he wrote this article. He put it on my Facebook page. And he said, well, I guess nobody's interested. And about 3 weeks later, some young girl, 19-year-old, wrote to him and said, hey, this is what you're missing, and this is how you can fix it. And he said, do you want to be a partner? These two are going to end up worth a couple hundred G's this year. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me, man. But it's the same thing with y'all. I mean, you're putting the information out there. See, we're kind of stuck because we can put out about 55% of what we actually know we actually make available. Because ICAR works on the premise of abduction criteria and contact criteria, meaning that we're looking for specific things. That's why I brought keywords up in the beginning, because we have such a large caseload now that we know X amount of similarities. It don't matter who you are or what kind of experience you're having, these similarities, if you're truly an abductee or contactee, have to be part of it or you're not. It's not the aliens that are visiting this planet. We've got enough data to know that. Now, somebody asked me the other day, do you have enough data to know what the hell is that going on? I said, I'll tell you this much. They've got multiple agendas running multiple planes, and I said the biggest thing and the most important things humans have to understand is we're not the total agenda. We're part of their agenda. It's hard to make humans understand this. They want to put themselves first. But these are very advanced alien races that are using part of what's here for whatever they're doing here. And they have unlimited patience. They've been here a long time.
If you can get my dog that was paralyzed and cure them in 10 minutes, and if you can get Chris Bledsoe, who had Crohn's disease for 2 years in bed, you know, couldn't even move around.
Well, that's a good point.
In an hour, totally cure him. And then with me, you know, these beings were, you know, 50 feet away from me in that huge, gigantic ship and controlled me the way that they did. I mean, please, we're like little ants to them, you know.
Well, it was funny because I had kind of about 18, 20, it was about 20 years ago, I kind of was waning on this. It was getting to be a bit much after about 12 years of research, 10 years of research. And I got a letter from a lady in California who had terminal cancer, and she wanted to tell me about her experiences. And 2 weeks later, another lady from California, one was from San Antonio, I think the other one was from San Diego, wrote me a letter about she had stage 4 cancer, and she wanted to tell someone about her experiences. So I was like, okay, well, this is going to be depressing. So I read both letters, and like I said, it was very depressing. So I didn't think I wrote him back a nice letter and said, I'm sorry to hear what's happening to him. And I said, you know, sometimes the awakening maybe can push him. Maybe next time you see ETs, I said, telepathically, say, can you do about this? Long story short, about 6 months passes. I get a phone call live on the air from one of the ladies. She said, I just wanted to call and tell you that I'm completely cancer-free. I said, oh, the chemo works. She said, no. She said, about 2 weeks after I had talked to you, she said, I had a contact. She said, I was furious. I was mad. She said, because, you know, what the hell? I'm going to die anyway. She figured, what the hell? And she said, the next morning she woke up, and she said she felt like she was 25 again. She's like, what the hell? And she was moving around, eating. She felt good. But she just thought it was temporary. A week passes. She's like, wow, what's going on? Her hair starts growing back, and she's getting all her color back. Month goes by. She said, screw it. She goes to the doctor because she was scared to jinx herself. She goes to the doctor. The doctor runs tests. Not only was the cancer gone, but as far as the doctor could tell, she had never had cancer. This happened to two women within 2 months of each other going to two separate places. And the cases are very well documented, which is a very interesting part.
Let me tell you something else, Joe, on this topic, because this is a fascinating topic, this healing stuff, okay? I'm not going to tell you any names, okay?
Yes.
You already know that everyone on our advisory board is a contactee except for one person, okay? Let me drop another shoe. Two of the people in our advisory board have had miraculous healings by these ETs, okay? These are very, you know, rational, you know, normal people, you know. They've had debilitating diseases. Two of them were completely healed, okay? So this is such a complex phenomenon, Joe. Now, let me finish that last phase, okay? You talked about the therapy and the support stuff. You talked about the educational. You liked the science-oriented orientation and the physics orientation that we're doing. The last part is the research stuff, okay? Because I know it coincides with a lot of what you're doing. But we've got this academic that's going to be doing it more in terms of how an academic would do it. What guidance can you give us, hindsight, you know, to be able to, you know, to not that, you know, to do this properly, to not to step on any holes here, you know, from your experience of your work? What tips can you give us? Because we're just starting this. We're just developing these secondary questionnaires now.
Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you, too, what the question is. I'm glad you brought it back up because one of the things we do sometimes, and this is going to vary because the secondary questionnaires are really important. And one of the reasons we made the initial questionnaire such a pain in the ass and so long was to kind of weed out the crowd. But we have secondary questionnaires based on what you answer on the first one. And then usually on the third time around, one of the directors, depending on the case or lack of information, will customize one for that particular contactee. Stuff that they're not haven't been able to glean or gain while talking to them. Because there's numerous ways. I mean, we don't like to use hypnosis but as a last resort. We really don't, because you risk, you know, tainting memories and stuff like that. Even good hypnotherapists can make mistakes, or a lot of times the contactee itself can misinterpret something that was in their head. So you want to kind of use it as a last resort. But it is a good tool. And it's also a good tool for finding out when somebody's having an experience like these kind. When somebody comes to you and they tell you, okay, we're having all these overflowing love and peace, love, and light experiences, and we're glowing and flowing, and they're telling you constantly the aliens are here to save us and enlighten us. Well, you know that's not true, because all you got to do is look at the planet to know nobody here is being enlightened or saved. It may be a small segment of the population, but the general – it's one of the reasons I used to give everybody so much hell about 2012. Oh, the consciousness is going to get – no, you're never going to get the Indians, the Chinese, and the Americans, the Russians all to agree at one thing about one time at any given time while we're all alive. It's not going to happen. We're nowhere near that enlightened as a species yet. So obviously there's no aliens enlightening us, or we would – you know, after 10,000 years enlightenment, I think we'd be a little bit better off than we are today. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of rule that out, and you can kind of rule out that they're here to wipe us out. So what does that leave you with, Ray? Really, what does that leave you with? Why would the aliens be – if they're not going to help us – and they're not going to destroy us, what the hell are they doing here? Obviously, they have their own agenda, and we're obviously part of that agenda. Mm-hmm. And that scares me more than anything else, because frankly, sometimes when I'm dealing with this, I don't think they so much are here to hurt us or anything else. Sometimes I think it's an after effect of some things they do. Sometimes people do get hurt, but I don't think it's an intentional thing. I don't think it's mischievous or malicious. But in the same breath, I have to say, I don't think they feel all that concerned when they do it. It's a kind of a weird thing.
Well,
it's great contactees. Well, listen, point.
Yeah.
Great contactees will tell you this, that as far as the Greys go, a lot of times they will abduct in the same family line. So meaning that Joe the Grey probably abducted your great-great-great-great-grandmother 500 or 1,000 years removed. So he's kind of intimate knowledge in your family. So he does take a little bit more of an interest in you, period, because it becomes more than just the pet and owner kind of thing. It goes a little bit beyond that. But that gets really strange in itself. You'll see all that stuff gets really strange.
What I told the folks, you know, when we were forming this group, I said, look, I understand a lot of you, you know, have your preconceived notions because, you know, you guys have been doing this for so many years.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But why don't we do this, okay? Me, I'm a rookie here. I've only been in this field for a year, and not even as a researcher, just, you know, learning about this for a year, okay? But why don't we try this approach? And it really is it's an academic approach, okay? Why don't we put our prior knowledge at the door, you know? You can forget about what you've already learned. Go in there as if you know nothing about this procedure. And that's how I want these questions addressed, okay? Address these questions as if we know nothing. You have no preconceived notions. And how can we learn about this from an unbiased perspective? And so what I would like to do, Joe, is actually use you and some of the members in your group. Once we have some of these secondary questionnaires done, you know, and the groupings, to be able to get feedback from you. Because our goal, you know, is really to go in there unbiased, even though that's a very difficult task,
it's hard,
you know.
It's a hard thing.
You know. But at least that's the approach that we're taking, Joe, you know. And
that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Look, y'all can call us anytime. We got lots and lots of directors. Anything we can help you with, we help. There's a couple of groups we work with, and it's the reason why is, and it's, this is the difference. This is why contactee and abduction research is so different than ufology, okay? Because for some reason or another, everybody in the abduction field, whether we agree or disagree, have learned to agree to disagree. So there's no really hard feelings and no inside fighting. We pick on each other and I don't believe that or that, but we're all basically working towards the same goal, and it makes a big difference. Ufology itself is more about egos and books and who can get the most tours. It's not so much, because I say this all the time, you're never going to get to the truth chasing lights in the sky. It's not going to happen.
That's my position.
Unless somebody gets lucky and knocks E.T. down and he falls out on the White House lawn in front of a bunch of cameras.
I think that the key to this whole phenomenon, Joe, just like you, the key to this whole phenomenon is the contactee. It's not the ship.
It's not the ship. It's a contactee. And see, y'all right off got that, so that's going to help y'all right off the bat. You know, when we started out, that was our goal. Everybody had to leave their preconceptions at the door and go from there. And your own experiences, because people who have had experiences have to leave those at the door. So I used to tell people all the time, I said, I can't never judge y'all by my own experiences because there ain't nothing like y'all's in the first damn place. I said, so it doesn't work. There are some key things that we find, but there's some stuff that is just
You know, one thing that you said, Joe, that really struck me. You said, Ray, even after all this work that I've done in all these years, you probably have like 10% of the puzzle.
That's about it.
Was it something along those?
Yeah.
Something along those lines, right?
Yeah.
Could you elaborate on that, Joe?
Well, see, we look at it a little different because what happened for us is we started cheating, by the way, right? And this is what this is. This is a cheat. We have a lot of contactees at our disposal.
You said cheat, like
C-H-E-A-T? Like cheating, like if you cheated on an exam.
Okay, got it. Okay.
This is what we did was we started anywhere between 10 and 50 contactees. We would have them pre-program themselves at bed because we know that ET is telepathic and he commutes in a telepathic form. And we've had contactees say under duress that they've shot things in ET's head and ET's responded instantly. So I got this wise idea. This is about 20 years ago, by the way, 18 years ago. I got this crazy idea. Why don't we start programming contactees to ask questions? So when we would run into a roadblock dealing with ET, we would get a group together that we know were being taken on a regular basis, and we would say, look, and we would never tell any of them who we were going to do this with or any of the questions, so we kept this very pure. And we'd say, this is the question. Next time you get abducted, just, you know, every night before they go to bed or when they'd get in their car in the morning to drive or whatever they were doing, they were always repeating this question in their head. That way, when ET snatched them, it was the first thing out of their head was into their head. And by the way, the Grays will punish contactees sometimes for doing that, just in case y'all didn't know that, if it's questions that shouldn't be asked or if they think that you're not ready for the answer at the time. But for the most part, they answer you. And it's a very weird thing. It's one of the ways we found out about genetic memory when it comes to dealing with the reptilian contactees, that they have a slice of the genetic memory that runs in those reptilians' families because they're related to them. It's a very strange thing. We learned that through just questioning, having a different contactees question it. Mm-hmm. And that way when the and this is what's really weird too, when all 50 of them come back with the same answer, it always freaks you out. You know, because you're sitting there going, it's so much more than a coincidence after just 10. But when you see all of them come back with the same thing, you're kind of like, well, hell, there's no doubt what this is. So we started cheating early on, and it's a very effective tool. But you have to know the individual is a true contactee. And if the group is really contactees, you'll know. Because almost every time they answer the question, they ask the questions, the answers will come back the same. It works really well.
But even after all of that, Joe, in your best estimate, we really don't even know 10% of what's out there.
No, I agree with that. We, you know, somebody once told me, they heard me talking at a lecture one time. He said, God, you know the whole thing. I said, dude, don't take this the wrong way. I said, but if I, of course, got 10%, and I mean this, that's a high estimate. If we've got 10%, we've got a lot. And we legitimately have a bigger chunk than anybody else does because we just have more contactees. But the thing about it, and we have more directors doing this, but the thing about it is you're going to find from time to time something that stands out, something that's different. And any time that the light beams seem to get into the mix, everything goes right out the window. Because really and truly, they seem to just – their life does not seem to apply to our physics, is what I'm trying to say here. So for most humans, when they meet a light beam, it's like meeting God. There's just no other way for them to describe it. It's almost all of them think it's like an angelic experience, even though it's just an extraterrestrial, very advanced, mind you. But for our limited intellect, any being that can travel in space without a spaceship or create by thought and be in pure energy in front of you and then take human form, yeah, most people are going to consider that God. So that's going to be tough to get away from for a while. But they don't come here very often anyway. It's a very rare thing that they visit this planet. We're still, in the grand scheme of the cosmos, best we can tell from all the things we've learned over the years, is we would consider one of the African tribes or one of the South American tribes that still live in the jungle. That's how the aliens really perceive us. They're like, these guys are idiots. You can tell they want to keep us, though. All right, that's the most important thing here.
One thing, Joe, what I want people to do is I want folks to check us out. Okay,
yeah, get out there. And
I sound like a commercial here. The website is contactee.org. It's contactee.org. Okay, just by listening to what I've spoken about, we're quite unique. Even though there might be some overlap with what you've been doing, Joe. We are sufficiently unique, you know, in terms of what we're offering and our approach. And I think that it's a site for contactees, developed for contactees by contactees. And we are going to have a questionnaire, okay? So, again, you know, please take our questionnaire. It's going to be a while before we get to that second phase. Review our articles, participate in the different chat rooms, take advantage of our buddy systems.
Yeah,
we do have 20.
I like the buddy system, by the way.
Yeah, we have 25 people ready, willing, and able, and these are all very mature individuals. I don't think there's anyone under 40 years old that has volunteered for that. All mature people that have all been pre-screened and have been trained and to do this buddy work. So check us out at contactee.org. Again, Mary Rodwell and myself are the co-founders, the members of our board. We have four quantum physicists associated with three, doctor, the most prominent being Dr. Edgar Mitchell, Dr. Rudy Seals, Ralph Steiner. We have Whitley Strieber. We have Linda Moulton Howe. We have Professor John Klimo. We have Cynthia Crawford, who specializes in doing sculptures, ET sculptures. And she also works with a lot of contactees all over the world. We have Marilyn Hughes. We have Alex Sekiris, who has a website on consciousness studies, an excellent radio blog. And I could go on and on. Giles Campbell, a research geneticist. We have Dr. Joseph Burks, who's a medical doctor, who many, many years ago was associated with Stephen Greer, but I think since 1998 he's broken off with Stephen Greer.
Yeah,
which,
that peace, love, and light thing Stephen's doing. I bet she did. Stephen's a good guy. I've talked to Stephen many times. But that night we were having dinner somewhere, and he tells me, he says, "Well, for $3,500, we can go out to this field and I'll teach him how to have spiritually enlightened ET visits." I said, "Oh, dude, I got to go." I said, "I like you and all, but I got to go, man." I said, "That's not going to work for me."
We actually have people in our group that actually can call them on the dime, you know.
Yeah.
Stephen Greer might have lost his touch, but some of the people that are still with our group still have that power.
He's still got some people over at CSA and stuff.
Some other members that we have, Joe, which I forgot to mention, I don't want to screw this up, is we have Barbara Lamb, which have you ever had her on your show, Barbara Lamb?
Yeah, I have. And you know what's funny? I met Barbara in Laughlin, Nevada about 10 years ago. It was right after Katrina. I had flown out after Katrina. And I was out there speaking, and she was speaking. And she invited me to her contactee session, her hypnosis session. And it was we had a good time, a good talk. Everybody was very interested in what we had to say. She was very surprised to meet someone with the level of knowledge we had. And, you don't usually find researchers like us at those kind of conferences. It's usually more contactees than researchers.
And, she's a lovely lady.
Yeah,
I mean,
we did some.
The definition of love is Barbara and Mary, you know, wonderful ladies.
And Mary, I like Mary. We get along fabulous. She's always fun to talk to. She's always information. I think
once a week she sends me emails of dirty jokes, you know. So.
She's a lot of fun. She's hardworking.
Yeah.
And she's looking, you know, just like all the rest of us are, trying to just help people.
Yeah.
We're all looking for answers. But at least in this group, and this is really important, this goes right back to what I was talking about earlier. In the abduction contactee family, we're all looking for answers, and we're all looking to help somebody. When you get into the rest of the field, that's not true. And it's one of the reasons the field's suffering so hard right now. Somebody wrote to me, this is funny, because we got to get out of here in a second, but a member wrote to me a couple weeks ago, because I was doing shows on the State of Ufology today, and they wanted to know why there were so many UFO TV shows and so many UFO radio shows, but yet the amount of people getting in the field seems to be shrinking. And the amount of conferences seemed to be shrinking, and they wanted to know why. I said, because they're just hashing the same old, same old. I mean, it's not.
Yeah, you're correct. Yeah.
When it comes to UFOs, it's just, or conspiracies, there's not much way new. And abduction stuff, whether it may be sensational on TV, most contactees do not want to get on TV and spill their guts about what's happening in their personal life. So you're going to see less television involved with that. I mean,
we already have like 20 people that are going to be out in the open.
Yeah,
you know, as part of this process.
You've got a group out that stands out. You've got spokespeople and your different people that are getting involved. And some of our directors talk about their experiences. And out of the big group of directors we got right now, only half of them are contactees. The other half aren't. We try to keep it even so that one half keeps the other half honest. It just works better that way, and we have less fuss with it.
Mm-hmm.
And besides that, it lends credit.
Joe, can I interrupt you for a second? Because people are going to be screaming at me if I don't mention their names.
Spit them out. We got time there.
We've got Ralph Steiner, who you need to have as a guest. Mm-hmm. This guy is a genius. You know, he's one of these child math prodigies, and he basically is a paranormal expert. He really is. No BS about it. You already know Kathleen. You already know Denise Stoner, Cynthia Crawford. I talked about. She has been a blessing as well. Lovely lady. Marilyn Hughes, she was the founder of the Out of Body Travel Foundation. Giles Campbell, who Mary wrote about extensively, he's a research geneticist, and he actually moved to be right next to Mary. Dennis Briefer, who was the past president of the John Mack Institute. He is an engineer and a physicist, and his specialty is on cold fusion and zero-point energy. We also have here in Miami two dear friends of mine, Blanca and Enrique Delgado, and they run a Miami UFO group called the Miami International UFO Awareness Group. We also have Aminette Burgueño, who's a hypnotherapist, a Reiki master, quantum healing person, and she's in charge of our contactee committee. That's where all the buddy systems are come out of. She's the one responsible for that. Dr. Joseph Burks, who I mentioned earlier, he's a retired now board-certified internal medicine physician who was associated with Stephen Greer many, many years ago. And Alex Akiris, who runs this site called Skeptical, which is an excellent blog on consciousness studies. So if anyone wants to learn about the topic of consciousness studies from a scientific perspective, check out skeptical.com. And then our consultants are Linda Moulton Howe, Dr. Leo Sprinkle, and then a fellow Cuban down here in Miami, Dr. Virgilio Sanchez Osejo. And he actually was a colleague of Dr. Hynek for 20 years and was on Hynek's board of directors. And he's written three books, ufology books. And he's now retired. He's 80 years old, but he's still kicking and, you know, and trying to do his research as well.
Hey, look, as long as they can keep in, don't matter how old you are, sitting on the Internet doing research, interviewing people, you don't have to be a spring chicken to do that. It helps.
So as you see, we have a very broad, diversified group, pretty much a who's who. We have differences of opinion, but we're all acting very civilized, very, you know, very humanely the way we interact with each other.
You can't have a real organization without having differences of opinions. If you just got a yes, me, then you don't have an organization. You just got a bunch
correct
of people following and you, and you'll never get to the truth that way.
The key of it, Joe, was that one thing that I asked of everyone is that the ego stuff has to be put out the door, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't want any people with massive egos, okay? There's some individuals that do have big egos in our group, but they're sort of not very active with our group.
Yeah.
I won't mention names, but...
Mm-hmm. Well, my directors just like to torture me, man. I think that's their whole goal in life. That's the joke, man. Hey, no, I'm serious, man. They're bad about it.
So that's one thing, Joe. You know, the ego's got to be left at the door. The second thing is the approach I told everyone is that no matter, you know, you could be Dr. Leo Sprinkle, you know, doing 50 years of research, okay? The way we're going to be approaching this project, this research project, is everyone's going to have to put their prior knowledge at the table. We're going to be approaching this as if you know nothing, you know, and with a fresh, clean slate. But that's the approach that we're taking, Joe. And I know that these research questions are going to be taking a hell of a long time for us to develop.
They're tough.
Yeah, I know at the end we're going to come out with a very good product because it's going to be a product of a lot of disagreements. And when you're bouncing off all these questions back and forth with disagreements, whatever you come out with is going to be a better product.
It is. It really is. It's when we started doing, a matter of fact, our November Hansenson as our director in charge of research. And, I used to make her crazy. I said, well, don't make them short, November, because we're going to get 8,000 people who are booked, you know what, taking these things, and we're going to be wasting half our time tracing that. So she started making them 75 and 80. And I got to tell you what, nowadays when people take them, it's a good, every now and then you still get some people to try to hoax, but not often. Most people who take these are serious. I mean, and then you send them the follow-up questionnaire, and then you usually got enough information that you can really kind of move forward. You can see what you can do for the individual is what it really comes down to.
Yeah.
You know, that's really what it comes down to. You can look and say, hey,
you know, now I got enough information that I can see who this person needs to go to, or if I can help them.
Exactly. That's the key of not only the research, but also the assistance, you know?
So y'all need to get that support stuff under control, man. I'll send you about 3,500. I'd make you crazy beyond belief. It's to me, this is a fun thing because I learn a lot, and it's a good thing. Oh, I tell you what, if you ever want to make Kathleen Maldron crazy, if she ever makes you crazy one day, play an episode of Coast to Coast I did when I rewrote the Betty and Barney Hill case. That'll just make her nuts. I like
Kathleen. Why don't you invite her on the show? Invite her on the show.
No, she's been
on. And you guys can go at it.
Oh no, she's been on many times. We've debated the Hill case many times. I've had her on just to talk about her books. We've actually got, between her and I, we've got a written form of what we agreed on, disagreed on, why I thought this, why she thought that, and it's posted. It's still public even today. Now I got to give Mary credit for that because I didn't agree with the original case. I thought Betty and Barney Hill's, the abduction they were talking about in Connecticut was a Millab case, not an alien case. The alien abduction happened in Canada. If you listen to Betty and Barney speak, they tell you where it happened. They didn't remember what hotel they stayed at. They couldn't remember the name of the place.
Yeah.
They had breakfast across the street. They couldn't remember where they had breakfast. They asked a cop. They asked somebody for directions. Barney described him as a black police officer, and Betty described him as – this is classic alien.
Yeah, yeah. I remember I read some of your segments where you went into those details.
Yeah,
isn't that the way to go? Isn't that the way to go where you get these differences of opinion?
That's the way you're supposed to go, yeah. Because somebody will get between us and figure it out. And that's the whole point.
Yeah.
The information is now out there, and it may be not even be in our lifetime, but I shouldn't say idiot, I apologize for that. Some researcher, I didn't mean idiot, y'all don't write to me now, Dan, that was a slip up. Some researcher out there will be going through this and going, well, you know, Joe was right at this, but Betty was right at this, so maybe this is what happened. And probably come up with a better theory about it, which is the whole part of doing research. I enjoy it. I love it. I like to debate with other ufologists. I like to push their buttons sometimes just to get their juices going, because if you get too complacent, you never get to the truth. So I figure that's my job in all of this.
So, again, to emphasize to everyone, Joe, check out our website,
contactme.org,
contactee.org.
Guys, if y'all listen to this show and you don't know how to spell contact D, we're going to have to talk. It also will be on the UFO on the cover site and one of my Facebook pages, so you can link straight off of it and it'll take you straight in. Actually, this was a good week for you, Ray, because we just had a massive advertisement thing going in effect. I noticed today our News on the Flipside show jumped from 39,000 to 53,000 fans, and I'm imagining because the advertisement is going to be running for both this show and for UFO Paranormal Radio Network that they're going to see a substantial increase in
listeners. Joe, is there any way, because our friend had mentioned something along these lines, of having like either a 15, you know, second or 30 second spot, like you advertising, you know, our show, sort of like a pro bono type of thing, you know, while we get off the ground. I'll check this new site out, you know.
Send me something, and as long as my directors don't have a problem, I'll go ahead and put it
up.
I don't think they will, but anytime it deals
She spoke with someone, either with you, I think it might have been.
Oh, no,
about
I don't really have a problem with it. Just one. And for the station, it's not even a problem. The station runs whatever it wants, but technically, most people don't know this, technically iCar owns the station, so it's why it all started. Matter of fact, you'll always notice, even on my show, it says iCar's UFO on the cover, iCar's UFO Paranormal Network. It's just an extension of the organization, because I got tired, I'm going to be honest with you, Ray, I got tired of fighting with all the different places to try to get the truth out. So I said, screw this, we'll just start our own, and that's what we've been doing now for the last, and it's worked fabulously. We get to do other shows and other big places. I do Coast fairly regularly, so they don't seem to have a problem. George don't mind that I host another radio show. He doesn't even – shit, last time I was on, he told me just plug away. Hell, last time I see him was in D.C., he had me sitting in the big chair. I was having a ball, man. I met him at NBC Studios. We did in-house, which I had never done it.
Well, we're all in the same boat here, Joe, you know?
Yeah, but send me
we have the same objective.
Make me like a 15 or 30-second slot, and what I'll do is in exchange, I'll have y'all not advertise iCar, but maybe the United Public Radio Network, not even Paranormal Radio, just United Public.
Definitely. We'll work out
those details
later on.
Yeah, make me one up and send it over when you get a chance, and I'll send you something back, and then we'll get it airing. And because I got to be honest with you, and I say this all the time, somebody says, I can't believe you help other organizations. I said, let me explain something to y'all. There's lots of contactees to go around, way more than we can handle. And that's just bottom line. And frankly, if there's other groups out there doing research, it's another way for me to cheat. Because, Ashley Ray, when we started this, we had done a 5,000-person survey when I used to be a research director for MUFON for Walt Anders. And we had done this case study where we found every case we could find listed around the entire planet about contactees, about 5,000. We used it to do a criteria group, even though we had no idea what was who. We were just trying to get some kind of things that were the same. We took that, and then we went and got all of John Masswerk, all of David Jacobs, all of Bud Hopkins, everybody we could find who had ever done research. We took all of that and incorporated into it and did a 2,500-person survey. So by this time, we'd actually surveyed about 10,000 contactees to try to get an understanding. Since then, ICAR itself has probably added another 8 to 10 on top of that. And it's really made a big difference in the way we look at things. But you'll learn. I mean, as you're going, you're going to be – because your mind's going to change from time to time. You're going to be thinking this, and then all of a sudden you get an additional 100 cases.
And who knows? Maybe the phenomenon is changing, Joe.
It does change. By the way, that's a good point. It does change. Here's a perfect example for you. Here's something for you. You've heard of missing time, haven't you, Ray?
Yeah.
Now tell me how many
I heard that they've worked that kink out. That sometimes they might put you there before the time of the event.
ICAR, by the way, is who broke that. That's direct. ICAR broke that on coast to coast.
About
8 years ago. One of the things is we learned that there was rarely ever had a missing time case. But we were getting these weird cases. And this is how we broke it, by the way. A couple in Florida had left their hotel to go to the beach, right?
Oh, yeah, I remember, with the parking ticket,
Parking ticket, yeah. That was the whole thing. And that was like when we went back and we talked to the people at the hotel. They said, no, it was 11 o'clock when they left. The people at the hotel remembered them. It was 11. The couple at the convenience store, the two girls working, remembered them because they were talking about UFOs, and they were kind of like, wow, UFOs. So they remembered them. So, and then you had the videotape of the hotel showing the car at 10 minutes to 11 in the parking lot. You know, and at 10 o'clock, that car was in that parking lot. But yet, the ticket was at 10.
Joe, that just goes to show you that there's so much information out there to be revealed. Like you mentioned, 10%, you even said 10% is probably too high,
Too high.
You know, so there's still 95%.
Because it's important for people to understand.
Yeah.
We know a lot, but we don't know anything.
Exactly. No, exactly. Yeah. So, again, individuals, if you want to learn about the science straight from the top physicists in the world, about this contact phenomenon, okay? And you're hearing it from the real scientists here, a person who went to war with Stephen Hawking and knocked him out, okay? He's the new heavyweight champion, Dr. Rudy Shields. Edgar Mitchell, who's the father of modern consciousness studies, so you're going to be getting it from the cream of the crop. You're also going to be getting the support component of it, 25 individuals, and we haven't even launched, and we're just expecting it to grow.
It'll just snowball on you as you go.
It'll just snowball. We've got 25 people ready, willing, and able, and trained to work with contactees as buddies. We've got the research project, Joe. We're ready to go.
I'll tell you something else we do that might help y'all a little bit. One of the early problems we have with contactees, they're very nervous about giving up personal information. All of our directors, everybody who's from research up, is under a non-disclosure agreement, every one of them. And I mean legally binding non-disclosure agreement. And the reason for that is we don't want anybody writing books or taking up cases without the person's permission and the organization's, because it's going to represent both of us. So we want to make sure it's handled, because in the early days I noticed a lot of other organizations, somebody'd get a case and then they'd go write a book about it and try to get fame. Isn't that bullshit? You can't do that to contactees, because then they're not going to come back. We're really strict on that. But most, I got to be honest with you too about this, Ray. Most contactees are willing to work with you. They really are. They are willing to get down and say, hey, and a lot more of them are willing to go public now than used to be. Most of them have their own careers, outside of working for somebody. But more and more, even more and more people working for somebody are now getting
I had two individuals this week, Joe, that gave me a call. Contactees, they have no one to talk to. And I said, would you be willing to, to maybe write up your story for our free website, And both of them said yes, But their main concern was that they wanted someone to talk to,
Yeah, and that's what they need.
Yeah.
And you'd be, I'll tell you another little secret.
Joe, we have an informed consent form that everyone that fills out our questionnaires is signing, and we also have an internal form in terms of what you just mentioned, in terms of non-disclosure. Because, as I said earlier, this information is being initially kept in-house, and it's free that's going to be publicizing this, and everyone is going to be named as in the writing of it in terms of the publisher, the authors of it. But eventually, over time, we want to be able to have all this data, obviously scrub, you know, for the names of the people. People's names are not going to be there. But at least in terms of the raw data, we want to be able to have that available to all researchers. Because as you were saying, Joe, you know, we're all in the same ballgame here. You know, we're all doing the same thing. And we need to work with each other instead of operating these separate anthills, you know, these walls separating us, you know. Yeah.
No, I agree wholeheartedly. It's one of the things I've always bitched about in the field. It's one of the reasons I started about 12 years ago when I started hosting Wake Up USA. I started making a barrier between what I like to call ufology and what I call contact research, because to me they're two separate fields. They're not the same thing. I don't consider any of us to be ufologists. I've got to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, I know nothing about ufology, to tell you the truth, and I have no interest in it.
Ooh, but I got to tell you what, it makes them mad at me when I do it, because they're like, you're trying to hurt the field. I said, no, I'm not. I'm trying to keep the abduction side of the field, the contactee side of the field, pure. I said, we don't want a bunch of buy-my-book people in here. We don't want a bunch of this. We want research. And if they want to publish the research in a book, that's even better. But not just a bunch of stories all the time, because what happens with the stories is they're never the same story, which, of course, makes people think you're lying. And as an ordinary person, if you never hear the same thing twice, then they're like, well, I can't be an abduction. It can't be the same.
Can I tell you a quick anecdote on that, Joe?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think it was Willie Strieber's wife, who now is very ill. She said something along the lines of, someone asked her, how can you tell if this person is BSing you or not, you know? And she says, if it sounds too good to be true, then it's real, you know? Yeah, or something along those lines, you know. If it's really weird, then it's true.
She's something else. We had on her page, it was her Facebook page, we had many, many debates on your news feed or whatever you call that damn thing on Facebook. She was great to talk to. She really is. Whitley, I've only interviewed Whitley twice. That was quite a time back. He's a good interview. He's actually fun to talk to. But he's kind of changed over the years, too, so I kind of leave that alone. When I don't feel comfortable with somebody, I don't want to interview them, because I don't want to have to put myself in a position where I might be being mean to someone just for the sake of it. So, and if I strongly disagree with someone like that, I'm not going to interview them, because it's not fair to them. It's like being Shanghai. Like Kathleen, her and I, we'll get together and we'll pick on each other, which is fine. That's fun and it's great for the audience. It's great banner. That's a different thing. I've done it with Paula many, many times. Me and Paula have discussed all kind of stuff, and it's a lot of fun, and that's good. That's good for the field. But some of that other stuff just seems to be mean, so I just stay away from that. I think my motto has always been agree to disagree. We can all work together. There's a lot of stuff to learn. None of us are going to learn.
That's the only approach, Joe. You know, if you yourself said that, not even 10%, more like 5% is what we really know. Then, you know, what's the point of like going back and forth? No, you're right. I'm wrong. I'm right. You're wrong.
I mean,
you
got to set some baselines, because it's the only way that people in the future can expand on your research is if you set baselines. And that's basically what we're all doing right now, is we're setting baselines for future researchers. Just like when we jumped off at John Mack and everybody else, they were setting baselines for us. We're all doing the same thing. 50 years from now, somebody's going to be using all of our research, unless ET becomes public, then it doesn't matter. But they'll be using our research to catapult this along. What scares me more than anything else, ICOR's got a good chunk of young members in it, but in general, I just don't see that many coming. This might help with y'all, so they might feel more secure or something.
Well, that's one of the objectives I had with some of the individuals that I've spoken to, is that most of our crowd, as you know, I picked off some of those names, you know, most of them are up there, you know?
And I know some of them people you were mentioning earlier works with Audrey and I forgot her name. She's going to smack me over at Starborn.
Ewens.
Yeah, Ewens, and which they're great. I've talked to them many times. We've had a lot of fun. We agree on a lot of stuff. We disagree on a lot of stuff, but that's the nature of the field. And see, they've learned like I have. You don't get mad about it. Well, you know, I'm right about that. You're right about that. What we're wrong about, we'll figure out later on. I mean, that's just how it works, and that's the way it should be.
My approach, Joe, is like you said earlier, we might know 5% of what's going on, but the other 95% we don't know about. So, you know, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. You know, a lot of work that needs to be done.
George Norrie said this on the air one night. He said, he says, Joe, so everybody in ufology knows 3% and y'all know 5% is basically what's going on here. I said, yeah, more like 6%, George. They know 3, we know 6. I said, but we've been cheating, that's why. And but it's a lot of fun. And I got to say, I meet some of the greatest people doing this. I've made lifelong friends with people I would have never met any other way, which are phenomenal friends. I mean, great, you know, connections. It's tough. I mean, because you're going to learn this too as you get more into support. You got to be a little careful, because people, you know, when they first come in, they're upset, they're needy, they need the guidance, the help. You know, they just need really somebody to listen to them is what they need. Because I got to be honest with you, sometimes when I do my first 2 or 3 interviews with somebody, it'll be like this: well, why don't you tell me about it? And then I just hang my phone on my ear, or put my headset on, and lay down and listen. Because that's really what's going to happen. You know, it's basically what I did with you in the first hour. It's just that way everybody gets what they need out, and I get to find out what I need, and everybody's happier, and it works much better. Yeah. But I know we got to get out of here because we done run over like an hour and 10 minutes now. thanks for hanging out. That was great. So you got 3 hours, and you did great for your first interview, by the way. I think you're going to be fine on the air. Matter of fact, when we were talking about Audrey and them, they got a show. You might want to contact them and have one. They got a good support group. I don't think they would have a problem with having you on. I know they've had Kathleen speak at their conferences and stuff before, so I don't think they would have any problem with that. And when you get a little bit more established, you know, everybody on the board, well, about half everybody you mentioned earlier has been on Coast. So when you get a little bit more, you know, sites and a little more together and all, give them a contact. Because Coast wants people to come on their show. They're like any other radio station. They need guests, and they do 7 days a week, 4 hours a day, so they need guests. And as long as you're decent, they want you to come on. And they got a good crew over there. They all do good work. Tom does good work. Lisa and all of them do good work. I really enjoy it when I get to go on with them. So, and once you establish a rapport with them, anytime you get anything new, just write to them. They're like, okay. Well, yeah, that sounds good. You know, they're really good. They're a good bunch over there, and it's good for assimilating information. And
Hopefully, you can do some plugins for our group, because even though there is some overlap, there are, you know, differences in what
we
do.
No,
there
are differences.
You know?
And no. I think y'all going to do okay. We're going to give y'all a thumbs up. We'll keep an eye, and then as you grow and expand, we'll talk more, and you know, bring on a couple of other people. Maybe we'll do a round table one night. I'll bring on 5 or 6 of y'all, and I'll introduce you. I'll have Melinda come on with us one night, and y'all can pick her brain. She likes to pick mine anyway, so it's only fair. Those are all good things, and there's a lot of other researches, especially with stuff that we deal with, like MILLAB cases, and like Randy Copain, he's well versed in it. Melinda's well versed in it. Neer is versed in it. Somehow or another, though, I got accused of being the guy in charge of military abductions. I was on Coast one night, wasn't even talking about military abductions, by the way, talking about something entirely different. It was only an hour appearance. It was doing the X conference. I was like the second person on or something. I don't know what I said that night. And I know we didn't talk about MILLABs. And I get an email from a friend of mine over at Coast saying, oh, Joe, I didn't know you were in charge of military abductions. I'm like, really? Some lieutenant general wrote to him and told him I was the guy in charge of having people military abducted. I said, well, if that was true, I would be living much better than I do today. So I said, just get over that crap. But it stuck. It stuck. I'll be at conferences. People will come up to me and say, oh, you're the guy in charge of military abductions. I'm like, really? Really? Who tells you all this crap? But it's just funny. You just got to crack up about stuff.
And just
leave it go. But anyway, I'm going to let you get out of here.
All right, Joe.
Thank you for inviting me
on your show. In the future, instead of like the interview stuff, you know, I want to be able to get your input, your insights, you know, your experience.
The next time you come on, we'll just chit chat. We'll bring you on. But tonight, I just wanted you to give, you know, promo. We'll talk a little bit more about you, and we'll talk a little bit about what some of the stuff we're all going to be working on, which is fun. And then maybe after that, I'll get you on with a couple people off of y'all's new group, and we'll do like a little round tree, and we'll schedule for a 3-hour show and let y'all do a round tree and you know, get out there. Because I got to tell you, those really work good when you do panel shows like that. You bring 4 or 5 of them, just let them talk. You really get a lot of information out. And it gives the contactee a sense of trust. They're like, oh, these guys sound pretty good, or these ladies sound pretty good, and I'll have to give them a call and see what we can do. And that's, you know, that's what it's about. It's contactee.org. Yeah, guys.
check it out. I just see something across the room.
One last question. The that little audio blurb. How long should we make it? Because I'm going to try to get Mary to do it.
Do it for anywhere from 20 to 30 seconds is good. I mean, if you can't get the information in, the shorter it is, the more often it's going to run. So know that.
Okay.
Because it makes a difference in our time links. But if you get stuck where you're not getting enough information in, go ahead and run it up to about 45 seconds. But usually 15 seconds to 30 seconds gets – you'd be amazed how much stuff you can say in 30 seconds. I was.
Okay.
The first time I ever did an intro, I was like, man, that was only like 3 seconds.
Okay.
That's why you.
All right. Well, we'll try to get Mary to do that. You know, she'll do like a 30-second blurb. You know.
Yeah. No, Mary's good at this. So she's got a good voice for it too.
Yeah, and she's got that funny accent.
Before,
you know?
I do tell her I said hi and I hope things are going well for her.
Yes, she said the same thing. I almost forgot. I would have been spanked if I didn't say it.
She's we get along fabulously, and she's a good solid researcher. I'm surprised y'all didn't approach Yvonne Smith though.
We did originally, but she's very busy. Yeah.
I was gonna say, I know she's busy.
That's what she said.
Yvonne's
she's very
like
busy.
Me. Yvonne's like me. She has three lives. Yeah. We all live in three lives. I do my daytime career, my nighttime job, and then my abduction and contactee stuff. And actually, these days I also design websites and computers. So.
Mary's extremely busy too. You know.
Yeah. Oh, I know Mary is. I know she is. I know it is.
Yeah. Everyone is, even me. You know, with my work. You know.
Well, no, that's how it goes, and that's the way it should be. But anyway, we're gonna get out of here, guys. Remember.
All right, Joe. All right. Thanks a lot. Send it to your email? You know, any follow up that personal email?
Yeah,
your personal
yeah, always,
email.
Always send it to anything stuff like that. You want to always send that because if you send it to the iCar that you put in, it may be days before I see it.
Okay, all right.
That iCar email is a nightmare. Some days, it's not, but some days it's a nightmare because all kind of stuff goes to not just contactees, all kind of stuff. It's what 14. The one you've got is actually 22 years old, but the iCar one is 12 or 14, 15 years old. So it gets a lot of mail itself. But that's a long we've been around. But again, Ray, thanks for being on. I had a great time.
All right, Joe. I hope it was a good show for you.
Oh, no. Yeah, it was a great show. I had a good time. Send it in. I see the virtual auditorium light that they've been saying good stuff, which is rare for them. They're usually kind of mean, so that's a good thing. But anyway, we're going to get out of here, ladies and gentlemen. I got a couple other guests coming up this week. I will probably post them on Facebook this weekend so y'all know who's up and coming. I've been getting a lot of requests for a lot of people with new books out from paranormal to afterlife. Matter of fact, I got a gentleman that's going to be coming on. We're going to be talking about past life regressions, what were we talking
near-death
about earlier, right? Near-death
experience.
Indeed. Yeah. Yeah, they're going to be coming on. We're going to be talking about that. Ever since I changed the name of the show, I get a little bit more freedom to talk about some other stuff. But
it's
anyway,
all interrelated, Joe. It's all interrelated.
Oh, yeah, it is. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get out of here. I thank everyone for tuning in tonight. I hope you all had a great time listening to the show. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, have some fun because I know sometimes you're thinking about it, you think, oh, life is long. BS. Life is like 3 grains of sand in a damn little hourglass. Get over it, people. It's short. It's fast. Enjoy it. Learn what you can. And hope you did good enough to come back again. Anyway, good night, everybody.
On everything. And we're not afraid to share them. False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new.
And I was conscious during the events.